Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap with a slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bilpolian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Hey, there's even a bridge! This is great! You can put six packs of soda in here. Milk, yogurt, you can put candy bars in the freezer.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Hey, I tell you what, you can take a good look at a butcher's ass by sticking your head up there, but wouldn't you rather take his word for it? No, I mean, you can get a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a butcher's ass, but then, no, it's got to be your bone.
Paul Perillo.
I have what doctors call a little bit of a weight problem. I used to grab bear claws as a kid, two at a time.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
And Andy. And Andy?
You know where the weight room is?
Andy Hart.
Were you watching Spank Revision? Maybe you were watching a movie with that funny comedian. Oh, what's his name? Buddy Wackett?
Hey, that's a pretty girl down there.
Geez, I wonder if she goes out with one of the Yankees.
Eric Scalavino.
I don't like you. Probably never will. You're a smug, unhappy little man, and you treat people like they were idiots.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
I'm going to make a toast to the best bunch of freaks ever born. Maybe we weren't the smartest guys.
Maybe we spent a little too much time puking off balconies.
But we had fun, huh?
Yeah! All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. Another edition. It's Wednesday here at Gillette Stadium. We'll be here until 2 o'clock taking your calls and emails on Patriots.com Radio, the best online radio ever created by man. Or woman. It's unbelievable. Or animal.
We don't really have any women involved with the show anymore, huh?
No.
Except Eric, I mean.
We got to get Petruni on here a little bit more.
Yeah. Whatever happened? She was off to a promising start.
Oh, she's very busy. I think she's waiting to be invited.
We should invite her back.
Yeah.
Hey, girl.
We'll get her on here. Anyway, we'll be here until 2 o'clock on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, and the email address webradio@patriots.com. Andy's here. Paul coming?
Well, I don't know, but he's at the press conference.
Oh, okay.
yeah, he's going to go talk to Belichick and then come down after that. Eric's doing press conference, practice report. He'll be down in the second hour.
Okay.
I'm fresh from the locker room.
Fresh from the locker room. Well, we're going to talk
story of the day.
Yeah, of course, Kevin Faulk. Sad story.
It looks like he is pretty upbeat. You know, he stood at his locker, literally, basically the whole open locker room period, talking to the media about it and how it unfolded. Basically, the thing to take from it is he says about a month he's going to have surgery and he's going to rehab his butt off. You know, he's on a one-year deal now, so his future is certainly in question here in New England. Would have been either way without the injury. But what made me kind of laugh is we all questioned immediately when we heard the news, ACL, is he done? Is his career over?
Right.
And he said his son asked him when he got home Monday morning when we got back from the trip, are you done, Dad? Oh, is that it for the NFL?
That's tough.
And he said he kind of laughed it off because he hadn't thought about it yet, which I don't know if I take him at his word or not.
Right.
But he's going to, again, said it a number of times, rehab his butt off. So he's not calling it a career just yet.
Well, good, but
oh, and the replacement that many people have kind of slotted in next in line, Danny Woodhead, who was signed and is a versatile, very productive, low-level college running back, tiny. But the biggest thing, I knew he was small. I didn't know he was 12. I mean, he literally looks like he's 12 years old.
Is that right?
That he could play some little league team somewhere.
Well, I want to get to that because I think Edelman's in the mix there too.
As will be Sammy Morris.
Yeah, going back to Faulk, it is too bad.
Sucks.
You know, when it first happened, you know, he got back up on he was on his knees, like bent over on his knees and elbows. And the last thing I thought of, oh, it's a knee injury. But it turns out it was an ACL, and that's too bad. It's a big loss. You know, first and foremost, we're sad for him. But as far as the team goes, it's a big loss because he does so many different things well.
Irreplaceable. Yeah. Does not have a backup. They've not been able to develop any type of similar back in terms of, you know, I mean, it's not just offense either. Don't forget, he's your sure-handed punt returner.
But isn't it ironic, though, that in training camp we're like, oh, they've got Edelman lining up in the backfield. Maybe they're looking for a backup for Falk.
Well, yeah, I mean, know? I think, yeah, I think that was definitely, and they knew they've been flying without, you know, nothing under there for in terms of a net. He's been relatively healthy the bulk of his career. Ever since he had that ankle issue, was that his rookie year or the second year early on, he's been relatively healthy.
Yeah.
For a guy who's not all that big, not all that fast, is involved in a lot of plays from a lot of different angles, he's been relatively healthy.
Taking on big guys.
Yep.
You know, I was watching the Dallas game with the last night with the Bears, and Marion Barber, we look at him as a tough guy. I saw him get blown up on a blitz pickup. I mean, knocked 3 yards backwards off his feet.
And most often you do not see that happen. It actually happened to Falk against the Jets, but more often than not, he holds his own and is obviously reliable. They trust him. So it's not just the physical. Can Edelman or somebody do the job? It's the trust that, you know, fourth and two, they go to Kevin Falk. Well, they're not going to Kevin Falk anymore on a key fourth and two. And third and nine when they need a draw, there's a lot there.
I'm a little concerned about this offense in that it could become one-dimensional in how it has to operate with the, you know, disguises and that type of thing, because I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball. I just don't know. And, you know, without Falk, with the blitz pickup, I mean, you have to just spread out almost every play against a team that pressures a lot, you know?
Could be. They certainly have not developed their identity yet on offense, I don't think.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, in the last year plus, as we've talked about, all these new weapons are nice to talk about, but until it kind of all comes together, there's questions on both sides of the ball, and I'm actually working on...
The fact that they're new means we don't know which ones are the most dependable yet.
And nor does Brady.
Yeah.
Nor does Bill O'Brien.
Again, you know, again, I was watching the Cowboys last night, and I know the Cowboys lost that game, but, man, when they're rolling, that offense... If our defense were to play that offense right now, we would get smoked.
Well.
Because, I mean.
But I would argue when this offense is rolling, any defense in the league will get smoked.
But there, you know, Romo was completing passes, you know, chunks at a time, and he's going to Witten, and he's going to, you know, what's his name? The other kid, the young receiver who's really good.
Dez Bryant?
Dez Bryant was in the mix, but the other guy.
Miles Austin?
Miles Austin is. You know, and he's going to them again and again and again, and he's successful doing that.
But you were watching a good stretch.
Yeah.
A good stretch of this team is better than that team.
Well,
because Tom Brady's better than that guy. Randy Moss is better. When this team is rolling at its best.
I think my point is he has established guys. Dez Bryant out of the mix, but, you know, he has established
guys.
Miles
Austin's a one-year wonder. He's going into his second season.
Let me tell you
something. Roy Williams is a disappointment.
You should have seen him last night.
Why are you falling in love with the Cowboys at the cost of your Patriots? You now want the Patriots to be the Cowboys.
I'm just wondering, other than Welker.
And Moss. And Brady. Who are all more established than anyone on the Cowboys.
I'm talking about receivers. Other than Moss and Welker, I don't think Brady right now has guys that he trusts all the time.
So other than Witten and Miles Austin, who does Romo have?
But he continues.
He hates Roy Williams. They don't get along. They bitch about each other. And Dez Bryant is unproven.
Well, but they also have Marion Barber running the ball. And I don't know why the Cowboys got away from that the other night, because they were doing well. I blame their play calling, but they have a running game.
I just think you have a negative view in your mind of the second half from last week, and suddenly you want to ship everybody out of town and bring the Cowboys in.
I think what I'm saying is I agree with what you say.
Maybe it's just me, but I'll take the Patriots.
No, okay. Spare me, please. I agree with what you say. They have a lot of new options. But I don't know if Brady is 100% confident with them yet. And I think, like you said, they're still trying to figure out who they are on offense. Whereas the Cowboys, I think they know.
See, I don't.
They know who they are. I don't.
I just don't see all the beauty you see coming out of Dallas. I think they have a lot of talent, and when they're rolling, yes, they look good.
Yeah,
I think this team has every bit as much talent right now, and when it's rolling, looks good.
Well, I do, too. I hope they do. I hope that...
I mean, you could see a good game from Fred Taylor, and you'll think they're running the ball again, right?
Yeah, but I have to see that game.
Marion Barber is not, you know, what Thomas Jones has been with the Jets. Just 1,400 yards every year, 1,300 yards every... I just think you have a negative view right now on this offense, and maybe justly so. Maybe it won't get to where we think it could get to.
So you're misreading what I'm saying.
You watched a half of a half of Dallas, and you're in love with
them. I'm very optimistic about this offense.
No, you sound like you want the Cowboys.
Listen, I'm very optimistic about this offense. I think they have a lot of potential. But like you said, I don't think they know who they are yet. I don't think Brady knows right now if a team wants to clamp down on Welker and Moss, who he's going to go to, who his guy that he can trust right now is yet. Right. I don't think he's established that yet.
Right. And he never established it last year.
Right. Oh, because he didn't have any other options.
Aaron Hernandez getting close, no?
Yeah, he, absolutely.
Big play week one, big game week two.
I think Gronkowski's getting close.
Well,
I think Edelman could emerge.
I think there's a developing trust with Gronkowski, but I don't know that he'll ever be, just because of who he is, I don't think he's ever going to be 6 for 110 every week or any kind of regular.
Third down and seven, you know, he could be that backbreaker tight end that just makes the catch
for a couple catches a game that are key. I agree. Maximize his catches, no question.
Right.
Right now, the biggest issue is the third down running back.
Right.
There isn't, you know, Gronkowski's an option. Hernandez an option. Even Brandon Tate may be an option. I don't really know that I love the options.
Somebody said, can you make Hernandez that guy? Now you're turning him into more of an H-back and asking him to kind of do things he doesn't do right now.
But I actually think that's going to be the answer. I don't think anyone's capable of filling the role where it's third down and X comes on the field. I think it's going to have to be maybe a little Edelman, maybe a little Sammy Morris, maybe Woodhead. I don't really know what he offers. Maybe a couple Hernandez where he motions into the backfield. I think it is going to be a committee approach to the third down back role.
And in your opinion, does that make it tough on the offense, the fact that we don't have established guy that comes out? You know, David Meggett, Kevin Falk, guys that, you know, they come in, Sproles before he became the main back. You know, guys that come in on third down, and whether he's picking up the blitz or he's going to catch it out of the backfield or run a draw, the other team, you know, he's very flexible.
If it's predictable, it's a problem. If they decide that only Edelman can run draws, you know, he can do that. That's part of his, because of his running background as a quarterback. And then Morris is then when you think you're going to need somebody that's going to have to pick up a blitz. And Hernandez comes in.
Right.
Yes, if it's predictable to that nature, that's a major problem because Falk wasn't predictable.
Right.
It could be a draw.
That's right.
He had no problem picking up the blitz. He had no problem with a traditional run play. He had no problem catching the ball, obviously. If it's predictable, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it will be. If they can kind of all do a little and shows enough versatility, then they may have the talent to get past it.
I mean, I think they've got the tools and the options to overcome this loss, but it's going to come down to execution because, like you said, it's going to be something different on every third down play, and that makes it tough on these guys to execute.
Plus,
you know,
durability.
Sure.
I have my doubts. Most of the players that I think are even possibilities, I have my doubts about durability. Edelman, I have my doubts about staying healthy. If you're adding more hits, I think that's an issue. If any of the other, Sammy Morris or Fred Taylor, if they kind of share any part of the third down load, that's an issue. Even Hernandez, we've seen him hurt already. We've seen him in camp. Every time he gets hit, he seems to get up slow. That could be an issue because Falk, for what he would get up, he'd take those licks and get right up.
Yeah.
Well, except for this time.
You mentioned earlier Danny Woodhead. I mean, I like what I saw from him and heard about him in college.
He could play for my Pee-wee team.
Yeah. And, you know, he's done a little bit in the pros, but not much.
Right. He's an unknown.
Is he a guy that, hey, he gets this break and all of a sudden he emerges, or do you think he is what it is?
What do you mean by emerge?
Well, he becomes, I don't know if he becomes Kevin Falk, but,
no.
You know, he contributes to winning football games.
I think he will.
Yeah?
And I actually think, my guess is they're going to fall in love with him. Just the whole shtick. Because he has some versatility.
Is he a dirt dog?
Yeah, I think he is. He's one of those. He's Rudy with talent. You know, maybe Ray Ventrone with a little more physical skill in terms of speed and athleticism.
Can he catch the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a receiver for the Jets.
That's true.
So unless, you know, obviously we haven't seen a ton, but I would think if he fell on his face catching the ball, they wouldn't have kept him in that role. So I think they're probably going to fall in love with him, and I think you're probably going to see him on this team for potentially a few years. But I don't think you'll see him as your lead third down back or lead anything. My guess is he'll be a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
But that can help. I mean, you know, you have enough of those right mix kind of guys.
Sure.
What I wanted to say is I'm working on a pulse story for the next issue of PFW.
I should hope so.
On the second half failings over the last year.
Right.
I don't have all the numbers in front of me, and I'm still digesting it all, but it is so dramatic. It's so – and this team, I believe – it was 72-2 previously leading at the half.
Right.
8-4 last year. Even 72-1 when leading after three quarters, going back to 2001, 9-4 last year. I mean, that's a dramatic.
But what about
change.
On the road? I think, yeah. On the road, they.
Well, yeah. But, and I'm charting games.
I think they lost.
Where they were outscored in the second half.
Yeah.
Because there's some victories in there. Kind of like the Bengals from week one. There were a couple games last year, it was early in the season, where they were outscored, but they still won the game. And the numbers are starting to say, really, just numbers-wise, it's the offense. There's so many times where the offense falls off the map. The defense, very consistent. You know, maybe they were bad in the first half and bad in the second. Maybe they were decent in the first half. They were more consistent. Half to half, you'd have these Brady games where he goes from 100-something passer rating in the first half to 55.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in the passing game really looks like
he had a 16 passer rating in the second half in the Jets.
This week. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, I understand the defense isn't that good, that it's got growing pains, whatever, but you invest a lot of money in that offense.
Everyone sucks but me.
To be your leaders, right? Yeah. I mean, Tom Brady, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, some of your highest paid players on your team, even the offensive line is pretty well compensated, guys like Copen and Light. That should be a strength. That should be the guys that if you need to jump on someone's back, tough times, you got to carry us a little bit, guys. And it's been their failings in a lot of these second half collapses. Now, coaching could be an issue, adjustments to adjustments, all that. But the offense is an issue there.
I think the mood I'm sensing in the organization today is that they are more upset with the offense after
they should
last
be.
Weekend.
You're invested there. Yeah. I mean, I know we've always said, you know, Peyton Manning and how it feels, and now maybe Brady feels to some degree that pressure of being the Peyton Manning and doesn't have the defense he once had, but over the last year plus, it really looks like the offense not carrying its expected share of the load, and granted, that's much higher.
For sure.
So I just find it interesting.
I mean, again, you know, sure, they scored 38 points against the Bengals, but 14 of those points weren't result of the offense. They should have been in the 50s, for crying out loud.
And that's the other thing. Even going back to 2007, they didn't really have to adjust a lot. They had so many huge leads that just changed the game. You know, the offense doesn't really have to adjust. They can kind of cruise to victory. The defense has a big lead, so they can pin their ears back, you know, the Mike Vrabel sacks and all that. The adjustments in this whole 07, 08, 09... now era, kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, like you said, they do have the options that they didn't have last year. You know, maybe like the defense, it's just going to take a little time for Brady to figure out. And
Bill, but it has to be better in that growing period.
Bill O'Brien to figure out what are we going to do with these guys? Who are the guys that we can count on, you know, in those crunch times?
You need to always be able to count on Brady, Moss. You know what I mean?
Well, I think you can, but teams know that, and they could count on them last year too. But they realize that, you know, teams understand that too, and that's who they're going to focus on. And Tom has to have that third and fourth option, you know, when it's third and long. And, and you know, that also begs the question, how do we avoid those situations? How do we do better and execute better on first and second down? That's another part
now
of the problem.
Now it gets back to your fear that they're never going to be able to run the ball.
I wonder.
With any consistency.
I wonder, you know?
It's an issue. It's clearly an issue.
Look, this line, you know, I honestly don't think they've run well in spurts and in games. But since Dylan was here, you could never say that they've been a running team at all. When Dylan was here, at the end of games, they absolutely did run well. But this offensive line is, I don't know if it's geared to be, you know, road graders.
So are we back to, you know, I heard Troy Brown talking about on the radio yesterday, back to the days of where a guy like Troy Brown is your running game and the little parallel pass that, and you tell him, get me 3 or 4 yards. That's our running play. You
right.
don't need to break, and as he said, occasionally you break one for 15 or something, but are we back to those days where you almost give up on the running game?
Because
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I still feel like Fred Taylor can be very productive.
I do too, but why didn't they have him in there for more than 5 carries?
Continues to say he's healthy. He was in the locker room.
I don't
Find
understand
out at 4 o'clock. Why? Isn't the injury report come out sometime?
Well, he might be still on there
still
for
have
a toe.
Toe, but how much of a toe issue is it? And
I don't know. All right, 508-543-7482.
If only we could be as good as the Cowboys, though. That's what I took from the first 15 minutes of this show.
Is the phone number on the Ace Ticket Hotline, and on it is John in Dallas. Hey, John.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Dallas, you get to see the best team in football, the best offense in football, according to Fred.
This is what he does. you say, he has to just...
Fred watched a little bit of the action from the Dallas
I watched
Dallas
most of the game of the Dallas game.
A replay, I assume.
And I was very impressed when Romo and Miles Austin and Witten, when they get going, they're tough to beat.
Yeah, they are very tough to beat, but Dallas has the same problem New England has.
That's what I told him. I told him when the Patriots get rolling to, Moss and Brady and Welker, they're tough to beat. Fred's having a little down period right now in his motivations.
Well, I think it's funny because I think Dallas and New England have a lot in common, and one of them is lack of an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So, you guys, it's interesting. You were talking about Fred Taylor. I think you were saying something about his lack of carries in the second half of the last game.
Yep.
You guys are getting, I think, to the heart of the problem, which I think a lot of people have expressed, even yourselves, over the last year now, going back probably to the beginning of 2009, which is, why do we see this significant drop in first half versus second half? Is it, let me throw it out, is it second half strategy, second half execution, a little bit of both? What's the, because frankly, I don't understand why we see a completely different team in the second half versus the first half.
I have a theory, and again, this is just me, so it's not based on anything, from a coaching standpoint, I don't know, but the fact that they've gotten out to leads in the first half so often tells me that the game plan and the preparation going in is good. That part is good. The problem is when the other team is making adjustments, it may be a lack of talent that is not allowing the Patriots to keep those leads after the other team makes their adjustments. I don't know.
But I think coaching has to be involved on some level. I agree with you. I think talent is a major issue. But as I was just telling you, a lot of the fall off in numbers from first half to second over the last year and a half are offensive. And the talent is there. We know Moss, Welker, and Brady are talented.
No,
right?
Well, see, that's where you get into a little danger of comparing the offense last year to this year. Because obviously last year that was the case, where second half they wouldn't hold the lead. We identified it as, well, Brady just doesn't have the options after, Welker and Moss are shut down. This year we think they do,
but they didn't.
But it might be too early to tell whether that will be effective or not. So it might be a little too early to come to any conclusion about this year's offense.
But the second half of two games has not been as good as the first this year.
No. Yeah.
After last year's problems.
Can I make a point, guys?
Sure.
We might have different personnel, but we still have the same offensive leader at the helm of this thing.
Brady.
Which is
Tom Brady. Right.
Right? So what's troubling to me is that we are seeing the carryover from 2009 in terms of second halves. I think if you went back to 2009, I think what's really interesting is if you look at Brady's first half stats versus his second half stats, and you consider Brady on the road versus at home, he's really two different players.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Brady, I'll just give you a little sample, right? So when Brady's playing it from a position of ahead, he's got 104 quarterback rating. When he's playing from a position that he has to come from behind, which is usually, probably sometime around the third quarter or third quarter later, he's got an 87% passer rating.
Right.
Right?
To me, that's not a huge difference because that's obvious. If you're coming from behind, the defense knows you're throwing. There's a little less.
Here's a little bit more for you, though. He throws seven more interceptions last year on the road versus at home.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 10% better completion rate at home versus on the road.
Mm-hmm.
His pass yards in the first half compared to the second half declines by 23%, favoring the first half.
Yes.
Just if you just looked at the situational stats for 2009, it looks like he is a completely different player.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's.
Well, that's my point. He's the same player. His physical skills, his mental recognition is the same guy. That's why I'm asking, what part does coaching play in here? And especially this year where we know Bill Belichick is very much involved in the game plan during the week. But on game day, I think he spends more of his time with the defense, correct? So therefore, Bill O'Brien, the play caller, may be a little bit more involved from halftime on in terms of those adjustments and things because Bill is more involved, Bill Belichick, during the week. And I like Bill O'Brien, but he's been the offensive coordinator for the last year and a half while they've lost leads. And offense has failed in the second half as opposed to the first. Right?
I think the problem is three-pronged, right? You can look at the offense, certainly, with Brady at the helm, right? because he's the only consistency. Well, I shouldn't say that, right? But he makes the decisions in terms of where the ball gets distributed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For passing. I mean, running, you just basically hand it off. But you look at the play calling, and then you look at the defense. I mean, what I haven't been able to dig up is if you compare first half to second half in 2009 in terms of, let's say, number of run plays versus number of pass plays and then efficiency within each.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any ideas? Are we running the ball less in the second half?
No. Well, I'm actually working on some of these numbers right now. I was doing it this morning before I came down here. No. The dramatic drop-off is passing the game. You know, there's a lot of games where they had, you know, 10 carries for 45 yards in the first half and 11 for 43 in the second, or things, you know, similar type numbers. The dramatic drop-off, and I'm particularly looking at the games where they were outscored in the second half, some victories, mostly losses, it's Brady. He falls off the map. I mean, literally, you're going passer ratings that are in the hundreds, 110s, 140s, down to 60s, 50s, 50s.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think I draw the same conclusion. The thing is I don't think you can relate it necessarily. A lot of people will say, well, 2009 was Brady's first year back from the injury, right?
Well, he wasn't hurt in the first half, and he was in the second.
Well, that's exactly my point. And you're saying that he performs better at home and on the road. How is that injury related?
I don't think it is. That's why you have to look deep.
2009, he enjoyed one of his most successful seasons statistically. Collectively, that is, right? If you take
right.
First and second half across all games.
And he struggled late in games in key situations, right? And so was he suddenly hurt in
the fourth quarter on the final drive?
Clearly,
other teams' defenses are seeing things that they're adjusting to in the second half that Brady in the offense isn't countering.
Well, that's my question. Are they not adjusting at all because they're up, you know, 21-7? Are they saying, you know what, it's working, we're going to roll with it, the defense adjusts, and then they can't adjust in the third and fourth quarter to whatever the adjustment is?
Yeah, whatever
was.
It is, yeah.
But again, that doesn't go to age. On defense, I would argue, okay, you're young, you don't have the experience. On offense, the offensive line is old, Brady is old, Moss is old, Welker is old. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
How much information
last year
do you have on the play calling first versus second half? Does Bill O'Brien go into the second half with the same strategy as he does in the first half, or does he automatically assume that other teams are going to adjust and you've got a totally different second
no
half?
No idea.
Yeah.
And that's my question. Because he is a young, inexperienced offensive coordinator at the pro level, that's my question. I don't know how he treats it differently than Josh McDaniels or Charlie Weiss.
And again, I said this yesterday, if, and this is a big if, the problem is the play calling. The fault has to lie as much on Brady as it does Bill O'Brien, because I know that he has input into that.
How much input? How do you
look?
Know
if he sees that things aren't working, I guarantee you he has the veto power to say, "Look, Bill, let's try something else." Absolutely,
I'm okay with that. I mean, he's clearly he's got a vested interest in this offense.
I think that's one of the reasons why Belichick feels comfortable, you know, not bringing in a career offensive coordinator, because he's got Tom Brady. I think if this was 2002, he would not.
But based on the results, he shouldn't feel comfortable. Because 2009 and early 2010,
unless we're wrong, it has nothing to do with the play calling.
Can I ask you guys another question?
Well, it's got to do with something.
Well, it does.
Then they shouldn't assign Brady to an extension, because something's not good.
Well,
can I ask you guys another question real quick?
Yeah.
Sure.
If we had, let's say, an offensive coordinator who was considered, you know, in quotation marks, a genius, right? I don't know if you want to put Charlie Weiss or Marge in that category, for example.
Sure. Just pick a genius and go with it.
If you had one of those guys, do you think we would see a significantly different outcome in the second half versus the first half?
I don't know. I mean, that is the question. Do you believe it's all play calling and coaching?
I think that's one of the three prongs, right? So I think you can blame some of it on the defense. But you can't put a young defense in a position where they got to, you know, they're behind.
Right. My numbers show me that in these second half losses, times when they've been outscored, the defense has been pretty consistent half to half. Not always good. Sometimes it's been bad in the first half, bad in the second, or okay. But they've been more consistent. The offense has been high and then low.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The problem is the offense hasn't generated points in the second half.
Right.
Yeah, they've been shut down.
Right, which makes it even harder on your defense.
Yeah.
When your offense is not putting drives together, not scoring points, that puts more pressure on that defense, and it seems to me they've been pretty consistent.
And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with first and second down. You know, they're doing three and outs in the second half because they're leaving themselves in unmanageable situations on third down.
That's clearly a part of it. It was clearly a part of it last week.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to it. But the to me the tip of the iceberg is it's gone through the offseason. You know, it's now heading into a second season of this is maybe the biggest problem on this team and maybe the difference between being very good and average.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys, thanks a lot.
All right, John.
See you, John.
Thanks, John. That's John in Dallas calling in on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
When the boss says it...
For those that want Patriot Talk with other talk radio stations are talking other stuff, go to patriots.com and listen to PFW in Progress.
You have to do it. PFW in Progress on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
When the boss says...
Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member PIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Fred's the boss, the chief, the leader of the PFW in Progress clan. And while he often goes on rants about fun facts, Skype, and making $5 the hard way, he sometimes has interesting things to say, or at least when you can hear him.
PFW in Progress.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. I just got yelled at because I didn't have my mic on.
Why don't you put your mic on?
Welcome to PFW. I had my mic off again.
Again.
Two shows in a row.
Turn your mic on, Fred.
Oh, I should remember to...
As sure as the stars shine above.
And Fred didn't turn on his mic.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress.
That's the longest you've ever gone.
And now, back to PFW in progress. That is, if Fred remembers to turn his mic on.
All right, back there in PFW in progress. Paul's back from Bill Belichick's press conference. And, Paul, have we learned anything that we didn't know 20 minutes ago?
No, not at all. A lot of Kevin Falk talk, obviously. And I think he asked me if we learned anything. Are you surprised to find out the affection that Bill Belichick has for Kevin Falk? Because I wasn't.
No.
I knew that Bill held Kevin in pretty high regard, and he backed that up. Wasn't quite Teddy Bruschi-like, but then again, it's not the official end of Kevin Falk's career. But he was asked about some third-down backs that he's had in his career, and he's had some good ones now. Eric Metcalf in Cleveland, David Meggett with the Giants. He's been around some pretty good players. He'd put him at the top of the list. At the top of the list,
yeah,
Kevin Falk. And not just on third downs, but on first and second down as well. Guy's done, been a great teammate.
Fourth down.
Called him a great teammate, great team player. And, you know, he's going to be missed.
He's quality.
Said it several times.
Quality
you're not
going
to be able to replace a guy like that with just one player.
No, you're not. And it really does complicate the issue that they had on Sunday, which is putting themselves in a tough position on first and second down. You know, and trying to minimize that third and long, and but now, you know, barring that, third and long becomes even more complicated without Kevin Falk, because like you said, there's not one guy on the team that can do everything he did. So it's going to be a mix and match of Hernandez and Edelman and maybe Danny Woodhead, who knows, doing things, all the things that, you know, Falk was able to do with one guy.
I just watched, sorry to change the subject, but NFL Network is doing a lot of Patriots, Jets, chalk talk type stuff right now, and I just watched Vince Wilfork at left end and Gerard Mayo at left inside linebacker get absolutely killed on a LaDainian Tomlinson, I don't know, 15-yard run, one of his longer runs of the day. Just absolutely killed.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's disappointing. Your defensive captains and...
I just saw Guyton should have made a tackle there that he...
Yeah, but I assume it out of Guyton. I don't assume it out of Mayo and Wilfork.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all right, let's not get off the subject that we were talking about, Kevin Falk and what they're going to do on third. What we were talking about, Paul, before you got here was I agree with Andy when he says that they have more options than last year. You know, we think they have a lot of potential, but they're still trying to figure out who they are on offense. I agree with that. You know, and until they do that, I think, you know, there could be some issues, especially on third down, especially where I don't think yet Brady has figured out after Moss and Welker who's his guy, who's his go-to guy. I don't think that is in the books yet. It looks like it might be Hernandez.
I think it's Hernandez.
Yeah.
But
you know,
when you say who they are, like you said, we think they have the options.
Like, I was watching
Brady's
the Cowboys
trying to
last
figure out
night.
Who those options are. Is that what you're saying?
I think, yeah.
Or you're trying to figure out who the Patriots are offensively.
Both.
Their identity.
Both.
Because I don't think the identity's in question. They're a passing team. They're going to be working to get the ball. Their options, I agree, 1,000%. I think Brady is figuring out who he feels most comfortable with beyond the obvious. And I think Andy and Fred, I think you guys are right. I think it's Aaron Hernandez. When all is said and done, he's going to be the guy, I think.
Well, if it's not, they're setting the offense back.
That's probably going to be those.
They did it all summer,
yeah.
And early in the season, it's looked that way. If he decides he's not at some point, retro.
I'd be very surprised if he didn't finish third on the team in receptions and possibly even second, just behind Welker. I think he could even get more receptions than Moss.
Well, I really think that sooner than later, they got to start figuring out what they're going to do with Brandon Tate. Is he, you know, a part of, you know, the offense, you know, is he going to catch 3, 4, 5 passes a game? I think they got to.
I think they know what they want to do with him. Now the question
is, I think they got to start doing it.
Well, yeah, but that's two different things. But I think it's pretty clear that he's that third receiver in terms of opposite Moss,
right?
You know, not a slot guy. He's an outside receiver. He's next in line after Moss.
But I don't think Brady's ready to start throwing the ball to him.
Well, that may be true, but they know what he is. He just has to produce in the role that they put him in.
I agree with you.
Because there's no other option unless Taylor Price comes on.
I think even we're smart enough to know what he should be, but he's not it yet.
Well, I never thought he was going to be it. I had my reservations all along.
Now, why would you say that?
Because I don't think he's...
Because he was never it anywhere.
I don't think he's a polished wide receiver. I think he is a absolutely explosive, dangerous return man, and I'd like to find ways to get the football in his hands because I think he can make plays that way. But I'm not sure as a consistent every play receiver, I'm not sure. That's not a finished product yet.
Beyond
that, I don't know about
that. They haven't
yet.
Even taken shots with him. I said this to you yesterday. No. Sooner or later, they got to just take shots to get it on tape to show people, okay, we'll take a chance with Brandon Tate on a go route opposite Moss.
Yeah.
But I've never been – I mean, we – I think PFW was unanimous in falling in love with Taylor Price early in camp as a polished option at receiver who – hit a brick wall at some point during camp, yeah. But long term, yeah, I still think he's the better option.
He had a big time drop about a week, week and a half or so into camp.
Maybe when they got deep in the playbook,
really
because
dropped
he missed
off.
All of the off
that,
the,
that could
the,
be
the time with the Ohio quarter system. But I still think long term, from what I've seen, he's a better legitimate receiver option than Brandon Tate.
And believe it or not, Belichick was asked about Taylor Price today. You know, kind of a strange at this stage of the season. He's been inactive the two games. But there was a question about Price, and he kind of mentioned some of those things that Andy alluded to. You know, he's done a nice job. He's learning the position. He's learning the receiver position. He's doing a lot of things in the passing game that he wasn't familiar with. So that would kind of lead you to believe when he had the basics that he probably entered camp with, he looked fine.
Right.
And maybe as things were more, he was more exposed to more stuff, probably started thinking a little bit, and that slowed him down. Because I thought he looked physically a step slower, mm-hmm. all of a sudden.
Well, that happens.
Yeah, and, yeah. That's...
Up here slows down, down there follows.
But it also was probably part physical, too, in just the grind of camp. And with the playbook getting probably expanded a little bit, slowed him down. And listen, right now he said he's behind guys. There's guys that have bigger roles than he does. He's behind them. I wouldn't anticipate Taylor Price suddenly being thrust into a key role. Now, could he be active one of these weeks, depending on injury, this week right now with injuries, they're going to need to activate another guy. You know, I don't know. Maybe they find more things for him to do than Danny Woodhead. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did you hear Tom? You didn't hear the press conference. Tom Curran legitimately asked Belichick today. Now, obviously, he was joking and he said it with a tone. But do you have any concerns that Danny Woodhead might not make it through security when he arrives at the stadium on Sunday? He's a very young looking.
Did Bill
lad.
Laugh?
Gave that smile. He goes, we'll have to check on that or something like that.
I thought he was going to make a Woodhead joke, not an age joke.
No.
Wow.
Paul, after further review, Andy says, and I kind of agree with him, that he's more upset or disappointed in the offense than the defense.
Yeah. I have equal parts blame. I understand the theory of you get disappointed more with the unit that you think is better. I understand. I can't argue with that philosophy. I understand that wholeheartedly. I think the defense is just not, flat out, not very good. I think there's a lot of pressure on the offense. And, we've been talking about this for a year and a half or so now. Brady's finding out what it was like to be Peyton Manning for first, five, six, 7 years of his career when he couldn't afford to punt. Because if he punted, he was probably going to lose. Well, that's what the Patriots are going through right now. Yes, offensively, there's no excuse for getting shut out in a half of football. They're too good offensively. They have too many weapons. They're too talented to go 30 minutes without scoring a point. So
too
I can't,
well paid.
I can't dismiss that. The offense let them down on Sunday. However, in the past, that may have happened, and you may still have had a chance to win the game because your defense kept you afloat. This defense is not going to keep the team afloat in those situations. And, conversely, I can't give them a pass for that just because, they're young and they're developing. Sunday was a bad all-around game.
Yep. And let's hope it's an isolated case.
They got outscored 21-0, right? The last 31 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No. Nope. All right. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the phone number on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's go to some emails. And Lyndon from Colton, California. Wow. Three major knee injuries to key offensive players in 3 years. The news of Fox ACL tear is really disappointing. He's a 12-year vet, so I have a bad feeling this could be the end for him. I really hope he's able to come back from this. I'm obviously biased, but I feel like he's one of the more underrated players in the league. When the Pats signed Woodhead, I was thinking that they might be looking at him eventually to replace Falk, contract and age concerns, but I didn't think it happened so soon. I don't know much about Woodhead, but looking at a few videos of him online, he reminds me of Darren Sproles or David Meggett. A bunch of people are thinking that the Pats should pursue Brandon Jacobs or Marshawn Lynch, but don't we already have a running back that gets 3 yards a carry? law firm.
Yes. Yeah, I don't have a ton of interest in Marshawn Lynch. I know that name's been brought up a lot. I'd have more interest in Brandon Jacobs. Because, first of all, I think if you can get Jacobs to back to being good, I think he's really good. I don't know if he can, if he lost a step, whatever. I thought Marshawn Lynch, when he was supposedly good, wasn't good. So now that he's not good, I don't think he's good.
Even though that made absolutely no sense, I agree 100% with it. However, I do think Brandon Jacobs is done.
Why?
I think
what happened?
He's a big power guy. When those guys have a
fat
to
nappy?
To me, those guys have a finite amount of
hits. Well, let me clarify, Paul.
Take.
Is he done or is he just done being Brandon Jacobs?
Well played, Maurer. I think he's done really being a productive back. I don't think he can get the edge anymore. He's a big guy, and you take a step away, and all of a sudden you just run Dane. You're
right.
Slow. That's what I see in Brandon Jacobs now. But we had a lot of those yesterday in the SPFW. There was a lot of trade talk yesterday. I like those.
Larry Johnson got cut, I guess.
Well, I figured those would be coming today.
Yeah, he got cut.
I figured we'd get those today. But we had Logan Mankins for Anthony Spencer in Dallas.
Okay.
We had Marshawn Lynch. Can we pick him up for Logan Mankins? Someone wanted to say Logan Mankins in a draft pick for Marshawn Lynch was the one of the first times that I can recall that I actually thought a Patriot fan suggested a trade
right.
that the Patriots were getting screwed on.
Right.
Chan Gailey would drive Marshawn Lynch to the airport.
And the other one was Brandon Jacobs. So we had like three separate trade proposals yesterday. I agree. I would rather have, at their best, I'd rather have Brandon Jacobs 6 days a week and twice on Sunday than Marshawn Lynch. But
I wouldn't take Marshawn Lynch at all.
I don't think either one of them is really good.
I don't like his look.
You're just talking about adding depth.
And
can we just put the brakes on a little bit here? Danny Woodhead and Darren Sproles.
Right. And David Meggett.
Come on.
Yeah.
He's a guy from Division II Shadron State. Barely, you know, he's the 53rd player. That's what great story.
He's 52 today.
He's a 53rd player in
is
this
he
league.
On your list? Or would he be on your list?
I don't even think he qualifies for the
wow.
list.
Wow.
He looks like the guy from Penn State. I talked to someone in the media relations department that said Danny Woodhead was in the locker room a bunch on Monday, and not a lot of reporters talked to him, and he believes it's because they thought he was a ball boy and didn't know who he was because he probably didn't have his shorts on that had his number on him. But, I mean, that's how small, young, he's just going to be the star of your offense all of a sudden? I'm sorry.
Zach and Marlboro, during the Super Bowl years, I remember this team being based on a lot more play action. I also remember Tom Brady had an incredible QB rating when he ran play action passing plays. We seem to have moved away from doing as much play action as we used to, and I wanted to get your take on it. Is it because we no longer have a solid running game to set up the play action? Anyone?
I think that's one good reason.
Yeah.
It's kind of the basis of play action passing.
Plus, when you turn around and there's no running back in the backfield, it's tough to...
I would also say that they've had pretty good success on some play actions. A lot of those bombs to Moss when Moss gets open... come off of that play action, sometimes a fake end around too.
Yeah,
Welker.
Yeah,
and then they look to go up top, and Moss is generally open on those.
Yeah, and I think Brady needs to get the ball away quicker on those too. I think he waits too long.
But I do think that the emailer makes a good point. I think when you look back at the Super Bowl years, you know, Antoine Smith had a 1,000-yard year in 2001. He was hurt a little bit in 2003, but he was outstanding in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then Corey Dillon in 2004.
Right.
Enough said there. I mean, it makes it a little bit easier to pick your spots with play action.
Joining us now on the Ace Ticket Hotline is Brad from the Eastern Shore. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
Good.
And rest of the gentlemen, not to be exclusive.
What's up?
I like the Ace Hotline. That's pretty cool. Thought we had a... we're definitely... I think bringing people back in from the edge a little bit, even though the Falk injury, is definitely hurt. I've always considered Falk, once he got done with his fumbling problems early in his career, has been a mainstay for the Patriots. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'd hate to see his season and his career end that way. But a couple quick things. I was listening to the podcast this morning from yesterday, and also obviously listening today.
Did you listen to Pete Shepard?
I did not, unfortunately. Oh. Slammed at work here, so oh. I haven't been able to. That's why I couldn't listen yesterday. But a couple things. One, real quick, what you guys were just talking about. I personally feel the shotgun kills running. If you're in the shotgun 80% of the time, you're right. If it's not a draw to Falk, what is it? And so the play action passing, you look back at the greats. I mean, who's been great at play action passing? Guys like, oh, let's see, Brett Favre. You know, and why? Because he'd hide the ball, the guy would get open, and he could throw it. And they didn't know whether it was a run play or not. So when you're in the shotgun 80% of the time, none of that happens. So now you're just standing there waiting for a guy to get open.
Have we been in the shotgun 80% of the time?
We were Sunday.
Have to wait for Mike Reese for that.
I don't know.
It seems like he was under center quite a bit. I
mean, we only ran a half dozen running plays.
Right. That's true.
Wait. What do you mean that's true?
We had 15.
He said a half dozen.
No. A half dozen that he was under center. The rest of them were all shotgun draws.
Okay. You said we only ran a half dozen plays.
No, I'm saying the shotgun kills your running plays because all they are then are draws. You said yesterday, Paul, you know,
I thought you said they only ran a half dozen.
Oh, no, I meant under center.
I misunderstood.
Yeah, no, we only ran a half dozen runs under center. So, you know, what's the chances of play action passing when you're only doing it six times to begin with? I really enjoyed.
I'm just looking at the first drive of the game. You ready?
Yep.
Shotgun, not shotgun, field goal. Right. So, that's about nine plays right there that you weren't in the shotgun.
No, but the second first drive half, of the game. The second half, I don't think we ever got out of it.
Well, second half, you were losing, too.
Ah, but that doesn't mean you
not,
can't.
Not until the end of the third quarter.
We weren't losing bad until the fourth quarter.
Third quarter, shotgun, not shotgun.
About four, three, half and half.
But we didn't run much off of those. So, the Tate situation, I think you're very accurate, Paul, when you're saying they just need to throw it to him.
That's Fred.
Oh, I thought it was.
Wasn't that you?
Well, I want to see what we have in this guy. Let's.
Yeah, but I thought, Paul, you were saying we just need to get him on tape and throw it deep a couple times just to get
it. I resigned.
That was Andy.
Oh, Andy. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Andy.
That's okay, Brad. No one listens.
But I totally agree. How can you say he's not an option? Brady doesn't even look at him. He threw to him once Sunday, and it was a 17-yard completion.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not even looking to that side of the field, you don't know whether he's open or not.
Well, that's my point. Look at him.
Throw him. Oh, no, I'm totally agreeing with you guys.
I generally assume Brady sees more than you think he sees, but I think part of the problem with Tate is I'm not sure he's always where he's supposed to be.
Brady kind of reminds me right now of the point guard in basketball who – you know, passes to the guy who's going to get points. And, you know, the other guys have to earn his trust. And it just takes time.
Right.
That's why I'm a little hesitant to compare the second half woes this year to last year. Because last year, maybe we were incorrect, but we identified it as lack of options. This year, I think we have the options, but they're developing. So eventually, maybe those second half woes can, you know, fix themselves, but we'll see. I don't know.
You know what's weird? It's crazy. I think that in a weird way, the Revis injury helped the Jets defense because it kind of got Rex out of that. We're just going to blitz every play with every guy we have. And I think the subtle little change in their philosophy bothered the Patriots offense.
And that's called lack of being able to change on the fly. You know, late in the game,
But
we were doing was chucking it up there. Brad,
hold that thought. I want to say something what Paul said. I'm not disagreeing with you, Paul, but isn't that the advantage the Patriots have with Tom Brady that he can recognize that and take advantage of it?
My point is I think they covered better in the second half. They took options away.
I think that
there's a general perception out there that Brady missed a bunch of wide open guys in the second half. Maybe he did. I'm not a coach. I'm not Bill. Bill knows that better than I do. I didn't necessarily see a lot of guys like, wow, how did he not see Welker on that play? You know, plus, Andy brought up a good point this morning, too. How many snaps did Welker play in the second half? He was not playing his regular full load.
Yeah, and they might have been cautious because of the head. I don't know.
You know, I don't think that we had a bunch. I mean, I'm sure that there were guys that Brady missed. He's not perfect.
But that happens all the time.
Right.
How often do we say, oh, he missed so-and-so? Sometimes,
you know,
on a completion.
I'm sure there were guys open that he missed. But I'll tell you one thing. That interception down the sideline, I saw another replay of it. It was just a bad throw.
Right.
The one that got deflected.
Yeah. Yes.
It was a bad. He was open. And Moss makes those plays. And but he threw the ball too far. He threw it.
Had it been a back shoulder kind of just
yes,
stop, he would have caught it.
That's what that's
no
supposed
doubt.
To be. That's
but he was,
what
but he was
to
throwing
be.
It. He was throwing it regardless, which going back to your basketball point would be like Rondo forcing it to Garnett, even though he's being
no,
fronted and a guy playing
no,
behind
No, there
it.
Was nobody fronting him.
Well, but
he
I,
was open.
But I think
no, but I'm saying he was forcing it rather than looking at any other options. I mean, good
no,
grief.
But Moss was
Hernandez
open on that
was
play.
Wide open all day long, yeah. and yet we. You know, we'd look at him once every 15 plays.
See, that's what I'm saying. I didn't see him wide open all day long and not get the ball thrown to him. Maybe he was. I'm not Bill.
Well,
I don't. You know, Bill knows from watching
the from team. Halfway through the third quarter through the game, every third down play that, you know, it seemed like you were turning around and it was a long throw down the sideline to Moss. And, you know, I'm saying he looked once to Tate and it was a 17-yard completion. Hernandez was open. I mean, the tight ends on both teams were wide open. I don't know what the middle of the field was Sunday, whether there was a magnet there or
what
something.
What was the biggest offensive play they had in the game?
Was Hernandez.
It wasn't the 34-yard touchdown to Moss?
Oh,
what
well,
it was to me.
Right, that was the first half. But I'm saying in the second half, Moss didn't catch a ball. And yet how many times was Brady looking at him?
Four.
He had the ball thrown to him four times,
and he
in
was
the second
open.
Half.
I think Moss catches that ball if the throw is on target. The one you're talking about, the interception that was tipped up by Moss and then ends up being picked. If that's a back shoulder throw and he just stops, he catches it for whatever it was, a 15-yard completion.
I actually think Fred's basketball analogy is he's forcing the ball to Garnett because he doesn't trust Kendrick Perkins.
Right.
That's what well, I mean. That's where I think your basketball analogy
comes
from.
He threw to Hernandez six times and he caught all six. He threw to Tate once and he caught it. I don't know what else you can ask those guys to do.
How about get open consistently?
Well,
certainly with Tate.
For Tate, not Hernandez. For Tate.
I mean,
why was he only throwing the ball once? Is Tom Brady suddenly forget how to play?
I don't know, but Fred, one of the guys on the curse words, made a good point. He's like, "Remember me? My name is Wes Welker." You know. And I'm not, and I agree. We don't know whether Wes was too dinged up and he was only out there for a few plays because he was woozy.
He was definitely on the sideline for plays.
Right.
So
but so was Moss. Moss was on the sideline a lot Sunday in second downs. I sent that in to Fred saying
that. This is, I think, a legitimate.
Why was Moss
criticism?
On second down?
We
why
run,
was Moss off the field half
we
the time?
We run the ball on second down too often, on second and long. We run the ball. It's like a little NFL trap. Like. Incomplete pass on first and 10. Let's trick him on second down.
Right.
Everybody
but we
knows that's coming
we compound
now.
It. We compound it by taking our best player off the field.
Well, that was your
point. Other than Brady.
That was your guy's point before the game even started. Don't take Moss off the field.
Yeah.
You know?
I
mean,
but
they I don't.
Did. Seemed like a pretty simple point.
You know, I mean, you're right.
We needed to get into that one. But I'm with you on that one, Brad.
You're right that we. It, you're right. We throw on first down. If it's not complete, you can 99% of the time in the NFL it's going to be a run because they don't want third and 10.
Every team does it now.
Right.
So everybody knows it's coming.
But we compounded it by taking Moss off the field, which then the whole secondary went shoom, and we were like 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. So we had 11 guys in the box.
So now we're back to Brandon Tate.
And well, no, but now it's a
no,
we're going to hand
off.
Tate.
I think if a defense feared that he goes deep every once in a while, that changes the way they approach it.
But if all we're going to do is hand off on second down, it makes it a very, and this goes back for the last couple of years now, we have become a very predictable offense with, I still think, one of the best passers in the game and one of the most elite receiving core across the board. I'm not saying there aren't teams that might have one or two different players that are better. But across the board, I will take Moss, Welker, Tate, Gronkowski, and Hernandez as my five receivers, along with Brady, and put them up against anybody.
Well,
but yet we are
Tate
so...
Tate and Gronkowski are totally unproven.
I'll take the Saints.
Oh, but I'll still take them. I'll still take them over. You name another five in the league...
The Saints.
...that are that
I'll
good.
I'll take the Saints. The only thing the Saints don't have in that group... is Moss.
Oh, I thought you were saying same. Sorry.
No, the Saints. The Saints have five, six guys that you can throw to on any
Fred
given play.
Would take the Cowboys.
And they have a quarterback who is every bit as productive, more productive right now than anybody.
Well, I'd take Breeze over Romo any day.
No, but in all seriousness.
Thanks, Fred.
Didn't you
see, that's quite a concession.
No, but in all seriousness, you like what you see from the Cowboys
like
and their weapons.
I did like what I saw. The tight end, the receivers.
Because they haven't moved the ball from here to there yet.
Oh,
all
did
year.
You see the Bears game?
Yeah.
No, they were.
They didn't score.
I know, but they were moving the ball.
Okay, well, they didn't score.
I think Romo has too much of a head case.
In between the 20s, they were doing great.
Well, a lot of teams.
Is this
do
your
that.
Defense of why you like the Cowboys?
I mean, they had a punt return for a touchdown, and other than that,
well, I still think across the board, you've got a tight end that can catch in Hernandez. You've got a red zone threat in Gronkowski that we've never had since Ben Coates left. We need to get some plays that the team goes,
it'll
oh
come.
Crap, I've never seen that before.
It'll come.
Instead of the bubble screen, the draw to the Falk, and a 30-yard pass down the sideline.
I just keep in mind, listen, you played the best defense in football.
It's coming. You're going to see these things. Andy and I watched practice. These things, we saw these things in practice on a fairly consistent basis. It's 2 weeks. I would just caution everybody.
This close. If that throw to Moss in the first half is a touchdown, the bomb, yeah, that's a different game.
The one down the seam to Gronkowski. How about the one down the seam to Gronkowski?
Right.
Right.
Those are three throws right there that changed that whole
game. He underthrew Gronkowski, and Gronkowski had his guy beat.
Yeah.
He leads him, and I'm not sure he scores, but it's a big play.
And it was so great for Sims to be going, oh, Gronkowski should have made that catch.
Oh, screw you, quarterback boy.
I know. I'm thinking he had to go through the defender just to get one hand on it.
We were saying he should have caught it because we've never seen him.
I've never seen him not catch the ball.
Plus, Kyle Wilson had a hand in there. Give him credit.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have if the ball
had
been out
in front.
We heard a
lot of that. You know, Brad, that's interesting you said that. I had a lot of emails about Phil Sims being over the top defensive of Brady.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, quarterback.
The only time, what's his face? The other guy,
Jim
made
Nance.
A comment about Brady was on the one that Moss actually defended and swatted the ball down on the sideline. You know, and he was like, "Oh, it looks like Moss was actually playing defense on that one."
I guarantee you, Brady gave a call to Sims' son at Tennessee and gave him some words of advice. And that's all you need to do to get these guys on your side. I'm telling you.
All right, guys, I still fear the linebackers. But you know what? You guys do a great job. Thanks for the weekly
Stick with the tight ends.
Yes.
I think they will be a big part of the offense and probably sooner rather than later.
I'd just like to see a linebacker make a tackle before 6 yards downfield.
All right. Brad from the Eastern Shore.
I'm with them again on that one.
Brad from the Eastern Shore, webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's see. We'll take an email here. This is Mike in Rhode Island. He says, I've gotten hooked on PFW in Progress this year. You guys are great when you aren't arguing in circles with each other. As far as our paths
go, are we great?
This year is starting to look a lot like last year. Bill's a great coach, and we go into games with a great game plan. By halftime, the other teams make adjustments, and often we're giving up games in the second half. I do believe that Bill is smart enough to think through and decide all the needed adjustments, but it's too much to take on by himself. How can he possibly analyze all of the mid-game data, develop adjustments, teach out those adjustments to each separate side of the ball, and continue to modify that strategy on both sides of the ball all at the same time?
He can't.
You look at Bill and any other head coach, they're on the sideline watching the game. He isn't looking at the offensive or defensive printouts on the sidelines. And in the 15 minutes he has in the locker room at halftime, there's only so much one person can address. Is it time for Bill to bring in some help that can handle these duties? I want to say something about this. I hear what Mike is saying. But look, you've got other head coaches that one side or the other of the ball are the basic coordinators. Shanahan with offense. You got Phillips is the defense with the Cowboys. A lot of head coaches take on the coordinator role for one side.
One.
As Belichick is doing with the defense. He is not taking over the coordination of the offense. I'm telling you right now. He is not. He's not the guy looking at those sheets in the sideline because he's not the coordinator of the offense.
What are you kidding me?
It's O'Brien and it's Tom Brady. Those two guys are figuring out what they want to do on offense. I'm almost 100% certain of that.
Defense, I never said that.
Defense is another situation. I believe he has taken over that coordination, you know, as much as Patricia's doing and the big guy, Peppers.
Pepper. Not Peppers. He's the big guy I'd like to have on that
sideline. Peppers is the guy we need
to get. But that's not uncommon for a head coach to do that. Usually it's more offense, but it's not uncommon for a head coach to be also a coordinator of one side of the ball.
Right.
So I don't.
It is uncommon for a team to not have coordinators.
It is. Now, here's my second part of this little rant. Okay?
Why didn't he give Bill O'Brien the coordinator title?
I'm going to address that in a second.
It's so ridiculous.
I think we need to separate.
I'll be back from this.
I think we need to separate the difference between the architect and the coordinator on both defense and offense. I think in some teams, they're both. One guy is both. He's the person who comes up with the schemes and he's also the coordinator who implements them and teaches them. Okay? But I think on a lot of teams, and I'm going to say even the Patriots for years, it's been Belichick. I think even when Romeo Crennel was here, Belichick was the architect of right. that defense. He may not have been the coordinator in on game day, calling in the plays and teaching what his architecture was, but he was the architect. I believe that remains the same now. The only difference now is that he's also the coordinator of the defense. But going back to the offense, he might actually be the architect of the offense, but he's not the guy on game day coordinating the offense.
I don't think he's the architect of the offense. I think that's where legitimately Charlie Weiss, going back to the Jets, was an aspect of the architecture
until
of
he
the
took
offense.
Away until he took away no, play no, calling from Charlie.
Did you say architect or play
caller? Right.
Because there's a difference. Because I think Bill was probably involved, but I think Charlie was very much involved dating back to when that.
I mean,
that
there's systems that were
in
place. Yeah, those are systems in
place. Get the ball off the field!
Defensively, I think his scheme truly comes from how he exactly wants it. Right. I think Charlie was an active voice dating back to the
no
Jets.
Oh, no doubt. No
in,
doubt.
In the system that then became in New England.
Yeah. I agree.
That Josh McDaniels now uses. I think Charlie Weiss was an active voice in the league.
Well,
I don't think Romeo was necessarily an active voice in the defense Belichick runs. That's the difference.
But I mean, do you think that they've scrapped everything from those times? I mean, you mentioned Josh McDaniels.
What?
Josh McDaniels, you know, at one point wasn't the coordinator, and then he became the coordinator the next year. I mean, basically, don't you think he was using kind of what Charlie had put
yes.
in place?
Yes.
And have they scrapped that now?
No, I don't think they have.
I mean, so
But my question to you is, why did he not make Bill O'Brien? You bring up McDaniels. It was the same timeline until it stopped.
Right.
Why did it stop?
I think that in Belichick's viewpoint, it's not necessary to give the guy the title of coordinator unless the guy is actually going to fulfill that role from an architecture standpoint as well.
Well, then he shouldn't have coordinators all along, you just said, because you said he was the architect.
Right, and I think that he's come up with that decision that, you know what, I'm not going to name these guys coordinators unless, because as soon as I do, a couple years later, they get plucked onto another team. You know, so
now
really,
it's about holding guys down.
So I think, and this is just my speculation, but I think that in his mind, a coordinator should earn the title of coordinator when they also are the architect of the offense or the defense.
So you think Charlie and Romeo should have never been coordinators?
Maybe not Charlie, but definitely not Romeo. If I'm right in that thinking.
I'm going to get back
so
to
who
God
made these,
complex. I am God.
Who made these systems?
Belichick made the defensive system.
No, he didn't.
Bud Wilkinson did.
I'm talking about on this
Bill
team.
Bill Parcells stole it from the New England Patriots what's his name?
But Bud Wilkinson
Fairbanks.
Chuck Fairbanks isn't walking through that door, okay?
No, but
But on this team, Belichick was the architect. He decided this is what we want to be on defense. This is how we're going to do it.
That's the system they want to use. The systems are going to stay the same.
Maybe.
The systems are going to stay the same. They're going to
bring in a Norm Chow or a Mike March.
They're
going to want their system.
No, they're going to have to run Belichick's system that he has here.
That's why you don't bring in a Mike.
But you didn't bring in a Bill O'Brien.
That's fine.
Bill O'Brien
didn't do that.
Right.
You just chose not
arguing. Right. So if I'm just going to run the system that I already have in place, do I really need to give this guy the offensive coordinator title?
Well, why running the system?
But why have they always done that? Why the change?
Because I think it might have to do with money.
Well,
this guy doesn't.
That's a bad reason.
Well,
what's the next one?
Well, no. If the guy's not fulfilling the duties that, you know, right now in the league.
No,
I mean,
Bill O'Brien would be doing everything Josh McDaniels did.
No, hold on for a second. These coaches talk to each other, you know, team to team. Coordinators, they know what an average coordinator should make in this league.
Sure.
You know, and if you're not doing everything that an average coordinator does, should you make that money?
Was he doing everything that Josh McDaniels did?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Wait a minute.
Oh, of course he is.
Isn't Pete Carmichael an offensive coordinator of the Saints?
Yep.
Why?
Doesn't call the plays.
It's Sean Payton's offense, no doubt.
That's
he's
what
the
I said. If it's money, if
you
that's
want to
a
get
bad
to your architect.
Maybe
title.
5 years from now, Sean Payton's going to come to the same conclusion Belichick came to.
It.
After people have plucked people from his
team. I think you're overthinking this.
They just won their Super Bowl.
I think we talked about this the day it happened when they didn't name coordinators and said, maybe he doesn't want to give Bill O'Brien because he's not sure he's really the coordinator and doesn't want to fire him after the season. Because now he can rework his staff next spring and just change it around without actually firing Bill O'Brien.
I mean, that might be right,
because he wasn't ready. That's my belief.
No,
he didn't believe he
that
was
might
ready.
That might be right.
That's the only reason
too.
That's good enough
but
for me.
But it still comes to the point where he's not really the coordinator. End of story.
Well,
none of the guys were really the coordinator.
Well, then if he's not really the coordinator, then the head coach is spread too thin.
Again, it goes back to my architect versus coordinator thing. I think in Bill's mind,
contradicted yourself.
You've added a word that no one else in the world used. I've seen many NFL rosters. It never says architect on it.
I think in a lot of teams, the coordinator is both. He is the guy who comes up, like Mike Martz, is the architect.
But you
of
just
his
said
office.
A lot of teams, it isn't.
But he's not.
Sean Payton.
Oh, yes, he is.
No,
Wade
he's not.
Yes, he is. Mike, you know, when Mike.
It's a philosophy that he adheres to. He didn't make that offense.
Okay. The philosophy that he's brought to that team.
But you're making it sound like it's something that's like you're splitting atoms.
No, I'm not.
There's a number of systems out there, Fred. Someone uses all the different ones.
I think a guy like Mike Martz commands a higher salary than a guy like Josh McDaniels when he first started doing it.
Because he's a former head coach and a Super Bowl winner on his role.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
I don't know that to be true.
Because he's responsible for more.
Because no one uses the word architect.
So can you stop using that? They do too.
So wait a minute.
I've never heard anyone say on an actual job title. It says
architect.
No.
All right, so he's going to be stupid about
it.
You know what I mean?
I am because you're muddying the water. Josh McDaniels, Charlie Weiss, and Bill O'Brien all did the same job.
Romeo Crennel was not the architect of this defense.
Okay, fine. Did I just bring up defense? No, I brought up offense. The exact position we're talking about.
Can we stop? And I want to get back to
they all had the same job, and yet only one didn't get the title.
I believe that on this team, Bill Belichick is the architect.
Okay.
He is not.
No one disputes that.
He is not handling the day. He is not handling the coordination of it.
Right.
Okay. I want to get back to something
that you talked about.
But see,
what a lot of people do is they lump in the architect with, you know, and a lot of teams, it's true. They are the one and the same person.
But you just gave me all the examples of these teams that have head coaches that are also coordinators, right?
Yes.
And yet they all have coordinators.
Right. But I'm saying
why?
Because Belichick came to the conclusion, I'll say this again, that you know what? I don't need to give these guys coordinator titles because they're not really doing all of those things.
But is Pete Carmichael doing all of those things?
I don't know.
You talk about all these coaches talking about comparing salaries and earning it.
Right. All I'm doing is talking about this team. I don't know what they're doing over there.
And you don't know what they're doing here either,
but you keep talking about it. Why is it that you keep saying because a guy that didn't invent the system, he's not doing as much as someone who
forget
did?
Forget about it.
Why is Mike Martz doing more right now in Chicago than Josh McDaniels did in 2007 in New England?
Oh, I can guarantee you he is. Because
why can you guarantee
because
that?
Because when you bring in Mike Martz, you're bringing in his philosophy
and
his system.
The system is in.
When you elevate Josh McDaniels, you're continuing what you already had.
Okay. Fred, stop for a second. The system is in. We agree. Mike Martz is going to run Mike Martz's system, even though it's not his. He's running that system. Okay? Now the system is in. So his job is to call plays and to create game plans and figure out how to attack and make adjustments and react to what the defense is doing.
And make
adjustments in the middle of the game. Bill always says first quarter adjustments, not halftime. That's what Josh McDaniels did in 2007. Just because he didn't bring his system with him from his position coach days and run his own offense, he is doing the same thing that any offensive coordinator would do. Why do you think one is more work than the other? And Mike Martz gets more money for one reason and one reason only. He's an ex-head coach. He's got more cachet.
And a Super Bowl winning coordinator.
You think Dick LeBeau makes more money than Patricia?
Of course he does.
Oh, thank you.
Cachet. He's been in the league for 35 years.
Do you think that the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers is putting in that defense, or Dick LeBeau?
Who put in the defense? The defense is in place.
But it's Dick LeBeau's defense. On this team, it's Bill Belichick's defense. That's a big difference.
All right.
And you can't deny that.
All right. Mike McCarthy is running the West Coast offense because he believes in the West Coast offense. He didn't put in that system in Green Bay. Should he get more money? No.
Look. Are you going to deny that this is Bill Belichick's defense?
No.
I'm not denying that.
It's his team.
It's his team.
Screw offense and defense. He's the architect of this team, this franchise.
Exactly.
So why have any coaches then?
I don't know what we're arguing anymore. All we're trying to say
is that we think he might be spread too thin.
I don't think he's any more spread thin than he was in 2004. That's my point.
Well, you're crazy. Yeah, they had four head coaches on that staff.
By title.
Other than him.
He admitted it last year when he said having people there to challenge you and not having people that just agree with you.
In 2004, you had four guys that went on to be head coaches that are no longer here. How can you say it's the same for him?
I still say, even with Romeo Crennel here, it was Bill Belichick's
defense.
You just have no respect
for anybody that's ever worked for this organization except for Bill Belichick.
Only when Bill steals things.
If you can honestly sit there with a straight face and say you don't think Romeo Crennel did more than Matt Patricia's doing right now. I don't have any respect for that comment.
Okay.
You're damn skippy.
You don't think Romeo Crennel was responsible for more success than what they're doing now with Dean Pease and now Matt Patricia?
Oh, so that had nothing to do with Brewski, Vrabel, Harrison, and all that stuff?
Okay. I guess that's what it was all about then.
Well, that's what you said before.
So Bill really must be the most overrated guy, because if you take away his players, he can't win.
Well, you said that before. You've said that, not me.
Tell me when I've said that Bill's an overrated coach.
No, you said that it has more to do with the players and talent than anything else.
But don't tell me that Romeo Crennel wasn't doing anything. You're embarrassing yourself.
Now, I'm not saying that either.
You said he wasn't worthy. He's not doing any more.
I'm saying...
You said that the guy that's doing it now isn't doing any less than Romeo Crennel did.
Let me ask you...
And that's a joke.
Let me ask you a question.
That's a flat-out joke.
You don't know that.
I feel like lightheaded.
Let me ask you a question.
I talked to Teddy Bruschi enough times to know what Romeo Crennel's doing.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Do you think Dick LeBeau does the same thing as Romeo Crennel did?
Yes.
Okay, so that's where you're wrong.
Why? Because you said so?
Because
he can't know stuff, but you know
because
everything.
Because on the Steelers, it's Dick LeBeau's defense. On this team, it's Bill Belichick's defense. It always has been.
But you need to have guys to implement a game plan,
and
Fred.
They have that
and
now.
Don't tell me Romeo Crennel wasn't doing
it. And don't tell me Matt Patricia's not doing it now.
He's not.
Shut up.
I can tell you.
On game day, who wears the red jersey?
Who
is calling in singles on the sideline for defense?
Well, now is it play caller, coordinator, or architect?
I couldn't tell you.
Now we've added a third title.
Right. I'm afraid to answer because he's just going to yell.
I
have no idea. What are you talking about?
Bill Belichick spends more time now with the defense that he did when Romeo Crennel was here on game day.
No doubt.
On the sideline, because I watched it from behind the bench in 2001.
No doubt.
Just said Matt Patricia doesn't do less than Romeo, and yet Bill has to be there to help him.
I'm telling you.
This is not a shot at Matt Patricia.
Because he has a red shirt on. Evidently, that's
all right.
That's the be-all end-all.
You guys just don't get it. You don't get
it.
We get
everything.
Explain it to us.
I get everything that you're saying. We just don't agree with it.
Did
you ever think of that?
I said in the beginning, in this team, Belichick is fulfilling both the role of coordinator and architect.
And always has.
And that's not uncommon on a lot of teams.
But you're saying totally different things on game day than he used to.
And he always has.
Yeah, and that's where we disagree with you.
And he
that's
always
just flat out wrong.
What,
okay. He spends more time with the defense and with his
my understanding,
play caller than he did back when Romeo Crennel was that guy.
From talking to guys like Brewski and Harrison and Vrabel, back in the day, Bill would give the game plan to Romeo and then wash his hands of the whole thing for the rest of the week. He doesn't do that anymore. We've seen it at practice. We know he's not doing that anymore.
Now, I agree that this is – look, he even said before the season, I am going to have more emphasis on the defense. We know that that is something that – he hasn't done in the past as far as, you know, working with the defense, more hands-on. We see him in practice. He's with the defense for the almost entire practice.
I'm going to give you an out. Did you pull a Paul? Did you say something a little bit stronger than you really meant it to come out and say that Romeo Crennel wasn't doing any more
never
than
did
no,
than
I am. I am.
Because I'll let you off the hook. Because I've said in the past, I've said a million dumb things.
Like
the whole... You know, Randy Moss, T.O. Dunn thing.
Yeah, no.
Did you exaggerate to make a point and pull a Paul?
No, no.
Because I'll stop right now and I'll leave you alone.
My point is this. People think, you know, Belichick is spread too thin. I'm saying on this team, he has always been the architect of both the offense
no
and the
No one's arguing with you on that point.
And I think,
but he's not
anymore.
He's the implementer now. He's got to do it all.
I think the one difference this year is that he's spending more time with the defense.
Right.
Yeah.
And last year, the one difference was he spent more time with the offense.
There's a lot of differences between the past.
So, and yet he didn't do it when Weiss and Crennel were on the sideline. That's all we're saying is back when those guys were here.
That's the only point we're
trying
to
make.
It was
more of a three-pronged
team except when he
effort.
Took away the play calling from Charlie.
That's fine.
He didn't take away play calling
from
Charlie.
Yes, he did.
When?
I forget what year. It was 03 or 04.
He took away play calling from Charlie.
He absolutely did.
You're thinking of Charlie when Parcells took away play calling with the Jets.
Get the f*** off the field!
You might be right.
Thanks.
On that one.
On that one. But the rest of it, you're wrong.
No,
I'm telling you that there's four guys that got poached off this staff and became head coaches at the NFL, three of them at the NFL level, one of them at the major, major college level, is no difference between what you have right now. I mean, listen, we all work here. We all want good things to happen, but that's a stretch. Matt Patricia and Dean Pease and Pepper Johnson and Bill O'Brien are not the same as Eric Mangini, Romeo Crennel, Charlie Weiss, and Josh McDaniels.
Why was Eric Mangini so great?
Listen, he obviously did a pretty good job, didn't he?
Again, on defense, I think it's always been Bill's defense. I do.
I understand that. We're not arguing with you that it's Bill's system. We're not arguing that point with you. We're simply trying to suggest that in the past, he would put together a game plan and be comfortable and secure in the fact that Romeo would be able to get that message to his team. That's the way Teddy Bruschi has talked. We've talked to these guys, Rodney Harrison, Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel, Willie McGinnis. Romeo's a great communicator.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And we understand exactly what we need to do. Bill has got to do all of the communicating now because he doesn't have guys that he trusts. The lieutenants aren't there.
I think that, and I've said this before, he felt more comfortable spending more time with the defense. One, because I felt he thinks he needed to. And two, because he has Tom Brady on offense, who is a de facto coordinator along with O'Brien. I think that's why he felt the ability to do that this year. I don't think he thinks, oh, my God, I'm taking on too much. I don't think for a second.
I don't think he thinks that.
I don't think for a second. And I don't think he is.
That would be admitting something. I don't think that's in him.
You have to take a shot at him.
It's not a shot. It's part of what makes him great. It's the complete opposite of a shot.
Michael Jordan never saw a shot. He didn't think he was going to hit.
That's exactly
my point.
That's
what greatness is.
You missed that point completely. Bill thinks that he knows how to do
one of many
everything.
In the last half hour.
That was as far from a shot as you can get. That's what all the great ones have. All the great ones think they have the way to do it. Most of the great ones have all the ways to do it.
That's how they get great.
And I would certainly put Belichick in the great category before you start with your nonsense that I said he was overrated.
He's a great architect. I'm not sure he's a great coordinator, Paul.
So how are we doing today, fellas?
I don't know. Turn your mic on. I can't hear him.
What's wrong with Eric's
Kevin
mic?
Screwed up again.
Hey, guy.
So how's everybody getting along today? Everybody doing all right?
Hey, guy. There's the dulcet tones of Eric Scalavino. Yeah.
Thank God you arrived. Fred's got to pause in his idiocy for at least 10
minutes. You got to be in your bonnet today, Fred?
Oh, yeah. Romeo and Charlie never did a damn thing.
You got to be down your unbuttoned shirt?
Yeah, we're going to take it to the extreme now.
He loves the Cowboys for some reason.
I think on this team.
Who are trailing 10-7 on NFL Network to the Bears.
I'm going with the Bears in this one, Andy.
I think all I was saying, Eric, is that in a lot of teams, the title of coordinator is both the guy who implements the system and the guy who comes up with the system.
I thought that was the architect. I'm being dead serious. That's how you described the architect last time.
I would actually argue that most teams don't have that.
I said on a lot of teams, the coordinator is the guy who does both.
Okay.
Some teams, you have to separate a coordinator from the architect. Sometimes the head coach actually comes up with the defense, hands it to the coordinator. The coordinator implements it.
Like in the old 49ers teams. Bill Walsh was the architect, or at least got the credit for that, and his coordinators implemented the plan.
Exactly. That's a good, Shanahan.
Right, but Shanahan, you can't count Shanahan. He didn't. No. He's not the architect of that offense.
Or back in the old days when Belichick was the architect of the defense.
Oh, in 03, 04-ish?
That was right. Paul Walsh's offense.
I don't know what I'm talking about, Paul. This is my point.
This is how flawed your argument is. I'm not talking about philosophy.
Obviously, he's using Bud Wilkinson and Chuck Fairbanks 3-4 philosophy. I'm talking about...
Once your system is in, it's in. Now you need someone to implement it.
When you bring in a Norm Chow or you bring in a Mike Martz to be your offensive coordinator, you're bringing in his ideas and his philosophy. Yeah. No one wants to do that.
No one's suggesting that they scrap their offense and scrap their defense and bring in big-name guys. Okay. You never heard Andy or I say that.
I think some people have said that.
No, but you haven't heard Andy and I say that in this discussion that we've had.
Is he back at USC?
I couldn't tell you where Norm Chow is.
He went to the pros. He went to the Titans.
Went to the Titans, but yeah, like I don't know if he's still there. I think he might be.
I think he might be
back
UCLA.
At USC.
Back
UCLA.
Oh, UCLA. I think that's right.
College?
Yeah.
I want to say UCLA.
I thought he's the offensive coordinator for the UCLA Bruins.
Yeah.
The UCLA Bruins. He's the offensive coordinator.
Okay, Mr. Deep Talker.
Eric, you got a practice update for us?
Yeah.
Thank you. We can talk
a little bit about it.
By the way, I just think it's an easy out to say Belichick's too. He's spread too thin. I think it's just too easy.
So the easy answer is never. So
I would tend to agree with you.
You bring in a coordinator, everything's going to be fixed.
You bring
in another veteran voice on the sideline to make these.
I just think
to do
decision?
What? Implement what Belichick already has in place?
No, I think adjustments that are made during the game aren't necessarily in the game plan.
Oh, okay, so that might be true. They're not making the right adjustments. But yeah. I'm not sure if, you bring in Mike Martz to handle the offense, that's going to happen.
I'm sick of the Mike Martz thing because I hate Mike
Martz. Well, I'm talking about a name offensive coordinator. Anybody.
But I don't understand why it has to be like that. Why that's the cut. You always make fun of Andy for making these extremes. That's about as extreme as you can get.
Okay, so
can't get someone who adheres to some of the philosophies that Bill's offense has.
And I believe that's who he has in Bill. He believes that's who he has in Bill
O'Brien. Then let him do the job. That's Bill. Andy's point is, why is he not
My original question was why did the timeline stop? The one that Josh McDaniels was on, that Bill O'Brien was on.
I feel for Bill O'Brien because the poor guy, he can't win.
No, he can't.
When things go bad like they did on Sunday, it's his fault. When things go well, it's Belichick's.
And according to Fred, that's the plan because you'll have him for 10 years instead of 4, right?
And if that's
really the reason why,
if it's financial or we're trying to discourage other teams from poaching, I have a real problem with that. I don't think that's in the best interest of the team at all.
I'll tell you what'll discourage other teams.
So would it make everything better if you just gave him the title of coordinator, Bill O'Brien?
I don't necessarily believe
it. No, it doesn't. It makes no difference at all.
It would make it better if they deserved it. Now, I don't know if they deserve it or not. That's why I say I think it is a simple fix.
See, I think it's back to the question. It would make it better if he had the confidence in Bill O'Brien to make him coordinator because he thought he was the best guy for the job.
Yes.
It leaves doubt in my mind that he didn't give him the title, that he didn't believe he was quite ready.
Well, I again.
And it concerns me.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Bill is being like this selfish, evil person by not handing out the title of coordinator.
No, but you did it. You did it again.
Under your plans, he kind of is.
But he made it sound like that's what we're saying. It's right. All Bill. He's selfish.
I know you're arguing, Fred, that it's the easy answer to just say that. But don't you think it's a little suspicious that we all kind of. Everybody
in Patriots Nation believes that he's spread too thin. Everybody.
Let me finish. We believed this back in February when the announcement was made.
Right.
That he wasn't announcing coordinators. Everybody speculated at the time.
Everybody.
Boy, is he spreading himself too thin?
Everybody.
Now we're coming to see that there could be some problems here. Don't you think the two are related?
You know what?
At all?
I think a lot of coaches, if they thought they could get away with this, they'd do the same thing. Ones that feel like they're the ones in charge of everything anyway.
You think Sean Payton could get away with that?
I think in time he will if he has continued success, yeah.
You don't think he can get away with that right now? Of course he could.
I don't know.
Of course he could. It's his offense. He calls the plays.
If he wins another one, he probably just won the Super Bowl.
If he didn't want to have an offensive coordinator, he wouldn't have one.
Yeah.
But he does.
But, I mean, even when guys like Mike Holmgren in Seattle, he was the GM and the head coach, correct?
Yes.
For most of his time, if not all of his time there.
They stripped him late.
The last
year. Right.
They
stripped him late because he was starting to struggle. The team was starting to struggle, I should say. And the perception was, he's doing too much. He's got too many things on his plate. He's the GM. He's the coach. He's got too much going on. When a team
and offensive starts coordinator, to, probably.
Probably offensive coordinator, too. So when a team starts to have trouble, and the figurehead is the one who's, in essence, doing everything, that's where the fingers start to get pointed by. It's just natural.
Sure. I mean, everyone's looking for a scapegoat. And on this team, you know, it's tough to criticize Bill Belichick because... You know, he's Bill Belichick. But I'm not buying this, he's doing too much. And I mean, he's not an idiot. I don't think he's that stubborn. I think he, honestly, when he says, I just want to win football games, I think he believes that.
Would you feel differently if he found out, and I don't think he cares
if he gets all the credit.
Would you feel differently if you found out that he tried really, really hard this offseason to get Romeo and Charlie and they just turned him down?
I would feel differently. Yes.
You know that he did not.
I didn't want Charlie, honestly. I did want Romeo.
Because of that communication. I don't know why you would want Romeo. We didn't do anything.
Because, I just said it, because of the communication.
Well, but you also said that Matt Patricia isn't doing any less than Romeo Crennel ever did. That's what you said.
But he may not be as an effective communicator.
That's part of the job. That's part of doing more.
He may not be as good at doing that as Romeo.
By communicating.
But I don't know if he's doing any more or less.
Do you mean between the players and the coaches or between Bill and the coordinator?
No, between the players and the coordinator.
Right, because he's backtracked again.
Because I think there's something to be said for the communication between the head coach and his coordinator.
I think one of the reasons they brought Corwin Brown in is for communication. I do. You know, and I think that might be one of the reasons why they don't have DNPs anymore is because of communication. You know, so
how about that practice report?
are we safe? Are we safe to get into that now?
Sure.
Okay.
What happened at practice?
Outside upper fields, same two missing players as last week: Terrence Wheatley, Nick Kazier,
DeBoot and DeBeck.
Right. Obviously, no Falk. As you guys, I'm sure, have talked about plenty already. Yeah. And that's really it. Really not much full pads.
Does Danny Woodhead have really big pads to make himself look big?
He kind of actually looks very, blockish in his pads.
He doesn't look blockish out of his pads.
No.
He looks like you.
No, I know. Well, he's actually a little bit shorter than me. Only player I've ever met in the NFL.
What's yours, Eric?
Hold on.
Do we have a weight for him?
I'd say 168.
No. It's got to be better.
They list him as 195. They also list him as 5'9". He's 5'6 really? At best.
See, that's the thing.
Because I'm 5'7".
Kevin
I was
Falk
looking
is
a little
like 5'8 at tops.
Right.
But he's sturdy.
Absolutely.
You know, like I said, I was watching that Dallas game, and even Marion Barber got blown up on a blitz pickup.
Kevin,
that's tough.
Kevin Falk is listed as 5'8", 202. The 5'8 is correct, and it's probably close to believable that the 202
he's
as well.
Thick. Now,
he's very
I saw Casario described Danny Woodhead as being a little stouter and thicker, and I don't see that
in
at
what?
All.
Than Falk?
You know, he said he's obviously obviously short,
the average
but
guy
he's
hit,
thicker.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for his size.
Right.
Stout and thick for his
size.
For
a middle school kid.
And I don't buy that at
I'm
all.
Being dead serious. When you see him, Fred, this doesn't mean he can't play. I'm just saying the reaction is he looks like a high school freshman. That's what he looks like. Size.
He's got the baby
look,
face.
Everything.
Yeah. But he was out there.
Why do you take that as a shot? It is what it is.
I didn't say any. I'm just laughing.
You go like I'm taking a shot at the guy.
I did not.
Fred's thinking it's Andy Hart.
I think you're being very defensive, Andy.
Well, no. Well, maybe because of the idiotic argument we've had for the past hour.
What? Because I have a disagreement with you? I'm an idiot?
No, because you're not taking the facts into account. You're just using your opinion.
So anything you've said is a fact.
Yeah, it's a fact.
Okay.
Fact.
All right.
Well.
Fact.
Fact is we know
that Romeo
anyway.
Crennel was more active on the sideline with less help from Bill Belichick than Matt Patricia is.
And that's the fact. That's a fact
okay.
as we know.
I will
concede that fact. Thank
no.
you.
No. I will go
he
with
won't.
The fun
he
fact.
Won't.
I will show you the tape of Bill Belichick with his back to the offense with the whiteboard, Romeo Crennel standing next to him, and Bill going over X's
all the
and O's.
Time.
A lot of times.
Because
now
it's
every drive.
He's the coordinator.
A lot of the
every
time.
Single drive now.
Obviously, this year he's doing more. He said he was going to do
more. You said Matt Patricia wasn't doing any less than Romeo Crennel ever did.
No, I.
Yes, you did.
On game day, absolutely.
And I offered you the chance to take that
he's
back.
He's doing
and
less.
You wouldn't.
Yes.
Matt Patricia.
Absolutely.
But why when I said. This
okay,
is what
Eric,
you
got anything else? Black jersey. Oh, sorry.
Please tell me something else
nope.
was going on. Please tell me something
face?
Else out there.
I really can't.
They haven't actually announced Falk to IR yet, so they don't have a new face.
They don't have a new face yet. The newest face was Carson Butler, who we've
practice
already known.
Signs
yeah.
the practice squad.
That fulfills that they have eight men now on the practice
anybody
squad.
Anybody out? Who's out?
Who's out?
Yeah.
Of what?
Who wasn't, you know, who wasn't there?
Terrence Wheatley
Terrence
doing no
Wheatley
less
than he
did
last that's it?
Yeah, which is that's how it's been the last 3 weeks.
Right.
That's good. That's a good thing.
No,
Fred.
It's a
they're,
great
they're healthy.
Thing.
So relatively,
Taylor was out there. Full
yeah,
pad.
Is it
everybody.
A good thing?
Everybody was out there.
Might it be a better thing if you had a lot of guys out that were coming back and that would explain why you sucked in the second half on Sunday? No,
see,
I'm being dead serious.
You.
It might
everything,
be a good thing if you had reinforcements.
Patriots.com.
Yeah. No, not at all. I like the Patriots offense. I'm not lusting after what they're doing in Dallas. Hey, they took the lead 14-10 over the Bears.
I'm still going with the Bears in this one. I like their chances.
Fred's not happy.
Anything
so
else?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, it was a very business-like practice as
how
opposed
was media
to the
attendance?
Very sparse as usual.
Sparse.
Yeah, a few cameras, the typical half dozen
everyone
beat
you know,
reporters
on the Red Sox beat to see if they make the
yeah. yeah.
Have you seen any of the any highlights of the games? There's no one in the stands at all at Fenway.
Yeah. Nobody's watching on TV either.
Well, no one's watched all
but they
year.
They still have
TV.
That sellout.
We can grow
going.
A little bit. We can be competitive with a Red Sox game.
But it, you know, it almost it's no, I won't say it. It was very sparsely attended the games the last couple of nights.
Screw the Sox. Let's talk some football. Oh. They've imploded. It's too bad. Really. It's good when the Red Sox are involved. It makes your October a little bit more
your
interesting.
Your sympathy is really shining through, I can tell.
Well, I'm not losing sleep over it, I can tell you that much.
I'm not either, to be honest with you.
Because as far as I'm concerned, when the Red Sox are out of it, baseball's done. I'm not that much a baseball fan where I'm going to watch it if the Red Sox aren't involved.
You won't watch the playoffs?
Not really. Maybe.
I won't.
If
they start at like 8:40
you know,
or whatever.
If like the Cubs were in the playoffs, I might watch.
I'll watch if Tampa Bay stays alive because of my boy Pena, but I'm with Andy. The games start too late.
I can't get invested in it because I know I can't stay up that late, so what's the point? Move on. Watch a sitcom.
And unlike you guys, I really do love baseball, and I love to get into a game, but I don't want to get into it and then feel like I need to stay up. Because then, you know, all of a sudden it's 12:30, 1 o'clock, and it's a Wednesday. Mm. I know you sound whiny and
right.
old, like, why don't they do it like the old day? Well, the games just take too long.
Eric, anything in the locker room that you want to report?
We got a chance to talk to the new guy a little bit, and he seemed like he, see what you did there. He seemed very tight-lipped.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Got the message very quickly.
Good.
Defensive.
Yeah.
Bert Breer asked him.
Did he say when he got here?
When you got here, and he just kept saying, I've been preparing for the Bills.
And Bert was like, no,
I've been preparing for the Bills.
I mean, what day did you act?
Oh, he cut out again.
All of us are.
All of us did. Now we're
doing what we do, and we don't have a radio show.
We were off the air. You were talking.
He rolls his eyes, yet he shut the whole radio show off.
No, you were on the air.
We couldn't hear each other.
We couldn't hear ourselves.
Yeah, but that
we could hear you, but we couldn't hear each other.
That's all right. Okay.
All right.
And he's about to put his hand through the glass.
Well.
That was a great catch.
So it was a little awkward exchange between Breer and Woodhead because he wouldn't say what day he actually got here. Which, if you're going to avoid that kind of question, that sort of raises other questions.
The way he said it was very defensive and made you wonder,
Well, what is the big deal about what day
he
got here?
That's the thing. That's what raises the question.
Could he have been here last Monday and helped them prepare for the Jets and then signed on Saturday?
Well, he wasn't cut till Tuesday.
Well, whenever, right?
But, yeah.
You know my point.
Yes, I know.
He was on the game field for the Jets on Monday, right, or whatever? So
yeah, he played.
But my point is he could have been here early in the week, and if... Who knows? It made you think of something like that, the way he kept saying, I've just been preparing for the
He should have just said when he got here.
Yeah, just say Saturday.
I mean, we saw him Monday in the locker room, but he had to go to meetings. He didn't talk Monday. So we know he was at least here Monday. Was he here earlier than that? I don't know. He left it open by the way he answered.
Well, Belichick said Saturday. They signed him Saturday.
They signed him
Saturday.
Already
gone. Saturday. Right. Yeah,
they announced it Saturday.
But he said he got here Saturday, and then we went to New York. My guess
See,
is
it's
that.
Phrasings like that. Right. They announced it on Saturday. When you say it like that, it implies, well, it might
have
been early.
He might have been here a day early. Who knows? Who cares? I mean, really?
I don't know, and I didn't care until he kept saying,
oh my God.
For the Bills. Well, yeah, if you just answer the question
Saturday.
Forthrightly.
One word. And,
yeah, exactly. Just, when did you get here? What day of the week?
I've been preparing for the Bills. I didn't ask that.
That's like
Tamash.
Like, no,
I don't hate anyone.
It's like the Troy Polamalu
like
shampoo commercial.
I didn't say I hated anyone. I didn't ask that.
It was like the Troy Polamalu shampoo commercial, isn't it?
It's very strange.
Let's get to some emails. Let's see. Ken writes in, Falk is going to be ridiculously hard to replace. The guy is Mr. Reliable, comes through 99 times out of 100. I'd say it's potentially a bigger loss than Welker. I'm really not worried about our talent on offense or, honestly, our talent on defense. When the Patriots decide to play, I am confident they can compete with anyone. We might be able to pick out a few weak links, Butler, Merriweather, Ninkovich. But if everyone is playing to their ability and not making stupid mistakes, we have enough ability to get enough stops and score enough points to win. However, I am very worried about motivation, effort, and discipline. You talked yesterday about a young defense possibly not being able to recognize second-half adjustments on the field, due to a lack of experience, and sure, I'll buy that for a small part of our second-half woes, but that doesn't explain away offensive stagnation. Let's say that last game, the Patriots saw Revis out, were concerned about Welker and him taking another massive cheap shot to the head. Why wasn't that guy ejected? And decided to target Moss and change up the second-half game plan a bit. So what? The feeling that Brady and the offense just didn't have their head in it anymore was palpable. Bad throws, missed catches, failures to get open. Motivation is a problem. And it's not just with the D. It's with our offensive veterans. They did the same thing in the second half versus Cincy. And then he gives reasons. He asks questions.
You don't think they were motivated to beat the Jets?
Well, he asks, he says, why?
This is a very common, by the way,
does
very,
Brady
very
have,
common criticism this week.
He says, does Brady no longer have anything to prove? That's one question. Does this offense that has veterans on it from 2007 still have a very extended hangover of we did everything we could, put together a perfect season, and still lost when it mattered, so why try our hardest all the time? And three, do they not trust the defense? Do they get disheartened because every time they get off the field, the D will give up another set of 3 or 7 points, and the O will have to go out and do it again? I'm not buying any of those, really.
I'm not either.
You know?
I don't buy motivation as a factor. I think they were very jacked up for that game on Sunday.
Oh,
I
said
they worked and it was Moss said it was the toughest week.
Toughest week he had in 13 years.
Yeah.
If it had been this week and they had just beaten it, maybe I'd buy it. But the Jets is a team like no other. We've seen assistant coaches celebrate victories like I've never seen with other teams.
I've seen assistant coaches celebrate a Jets loss when we weren't playing them.
Right. It's
the Jets mean
different.
A lot to this organization.
I'd love to say they weren't trying, and that's why they got shut out in the second half.
I'd love to blow it off.
Jets week is Ohio, Michigan, Notre Dame. It's right there.
Has anyone made the point that, you know, I know the quotes we get in the post-game locker room are usually, you know, we just have to make the plays. We just didn't execute. Has it ever occurred to anybody that maybe these guys are executing to the best of their ability, but it's just not good enough? I mean, somebody has to win in any contest.
On defense, I would buy that.
No, but I'm just saying. Yeah, I would certainly disagree with the notion that we have enough talent across the board.
Right.
I don't think, you know, to be good, yeah, sure, we could be a good team. It's hard because we witnessed so much greatness. I can't help it. I compare it to 04. You know, I don't think they stack up.
Now,
across the board.
But do they need to in order to win?
To win Super Bowls?
Yeah.
That's what you need. You need a great team to win a Super Bowl. There's very few good teams that go on to win the Super Bowl. The Ravens were probably one of them. You know, here and there, I suppose you can rattle off some upsets, but that's a hard way to go about it when you're not the better team and you just keep winning.
And you have to go through a great team at some point, I would argue. Even if that team loses, you may win an actual Super Bowl against a not great team, but you play in the same conference as the Colts. Last year, the Colts were supposedly a great team. You didn't measure up.
Last year, though, I mean, the Saints started the season. They weren't considered a great team. They became a great team as the season progressed.
Yeah, you didn't come close to measuring up to it.
No, you didn't.
No,
but week two.
But that's what I'm looking at. Yeah. I'm looking at the teams. Listen, this has gone on now from 08 on. When you've played the teams that, when the dust settled in that particular year, those teams that had the buys on their conferences and made it deep into the playoffs, you didn't stack up.
Right.
Probably the closest one is the one you said, the Colts game last year. It's hard to say they didn't stack up in that game. I mean, they lost a heartbreak at 35-34. But generally, when we've played San Diego, hasn't been competitive, right, the last couple times?
Yeah.
When we played New Orleans last year, not competitive.
Well, the problem is Pittsburgh, 08 is such a different season.
Pittsburgh in 08.
Take anything out of 08.
Pittsburgh in 08. But they went 11-5, but when they played San Diego and Pittsburgh, not competitive.
No.
I know, but we attributed it to, well, if they had Brady, you know.
I know, but I'm just talking about the team
in
relation to everybody else.
I understand. It's just, for
basically,
me,
you're kind of making my point for me. They have they have greatness at one spot who covers up a lot of these weaknesses. Across the board, I don't think they're as good as they have been.
If you're going to look into Eric's question, just matching up, execution.
Execution, yeah.
Everybody said the defense got old, and now they're trying to, maybe they went a step too late or whatever, and now you're trying to, all at once, you're trying to get young. You got all these guys playing. Well, have we reached that point on offense? And I'm not just saying Brady. I'm saying Matt Light, Dan Copen, Stephen Neal. Mm-hmm. You have aging offensive linemen.
Right.
Obviously, the age in the backfield. Obviously, Randy Moss is older.
Yep.
Despite the numbers he put up a year ago, maybe he fell off the mat. You know, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but that would be the question. Do you look back next year and say, wow, those guys got really old, really fast, really, they're not competitive anymore. You know,
right.
We went too long there with the Matt Light at left tackle. We went too long with Stephen. We shouldn't have re-signed him. We should have moved on.
Right. Or even, you know, just the fact that these things happen in the second half, and that's the focus that everyone has right now, that they start strong and then in the second half they falter. What's the reason for it? Could it just be that when other teams make their adjustments, this particular group isn't good enough to counter those adjustments?
Well, that's what we said. I mean, or I said it in the beginning of the show. You know, you go into the game, they get to the lead, which tells you, okay, the game plan's good, the preparation's good, but then, like you said, the other team makes adjustments, and we just, whatever, for whatever reason, we can't readjust, you know, adjust to their adjustment. And could it be at that point, okay, now they figured out what we're doing, now they're going to match up for it,
mm-hmm.
and now we're don't have the talent to just beat them.
To adapt.
You know, when we're just lining
just beat
up.
Them man to man.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, so I don't know. But it's something
That's
to think
it's something
about.
To consider, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah. I mean, because we're looking for answers. We're not going to find them in week two, but, no. and I think.
Well,
I,
but we were looking for them last year.
No, and
that's
and
the
we
issue.
We were talking
in
about
my
this
mind.
Earlier, Eric. I don't know if you agree with this, but I think that, you know, absolutely the trends on offense are look like they're the same, but I still am hesitant to say, oh, they're the same. For the same reason we were faltering last year is the reason we're going to falter this year. And last year we pinned it to lack of options. I think right now.
Yeah, on offense, I think it's a
offense,
different reason this
on
year.
Offense.
Than
I think
it was
on
last
defense,
year.
They're more level on defense than they are on offense. They don't. You don't see the drop off in the second half on defense that you do on offense.
The numbers would say that.
You know, I think they're.
But.
You know,
I think there's the perception that
in week one there was a big drop off from the first half to the second half. But I agree with your larger point. I think offensively, and Andy's doing the numbers right now, kind of looking back at the last year and then two games this year for the next issue, there's a big difference offensively.
Yeah.
A big, big difference.
Big difference. You know, teams are thinking, okay, this is what they're trying to do to us. Here's how we're going to counter it. And you would think with Tom Brady and Randy Moss and Wes, that, you know, whatever they decide to do, we'll have an answer to that too.
Yeah, and that's where it's because theoretically you'd think with Brady and Moss, when you get to that point where you're just competing, where, you know, kind of the one game plan got countered by the other, well, I feel like I should take my chances with Randy Moss just quote-unquote competing. Mm. He's supposedly the most physically gifted receiver to ever play the game. That's where he should exceed.
And we saw that in the first half against the Jets, that ridiculous one-handed catch.
But I think it's also fair to say any team decides to take away any one thing, they can do it in this league. That's where you need that second and third option.
But are we beating around the bush here? I mean, is it Brady? I know it's blasphemy, and I don't like to do it myself because I think he's proven that he can succeed in a lot of ways. He's done it a lot of different ways over his career, but the last year and a half, his second halves in games where they get outscored and they end up losing and giving up leads have not been good.
Well, no, they haven't, you know. And at some point,
do you just say, why is he not good?
No, I think he has to take some of the blame. You know,
and I think he would,
and I think he does.
He says that.
I think he does.
He certainly says it.
Yeah.
If he, you know,
but again,
no reason not to.
It's good to say it, but at some point you become Drew Bledsoe, who said in the past, continued to say the problems. And I'm not. This isn't a shot at him.
Yes, it isn't.
I don't know how he works it. He calls me fat, bald, and old, or he has to take a shot at Drew.
In all seriousness, it was great when Drew did it early. But then when you keep doing it, people say, well, stop talking about it and just freaking fix it. Don't do it anymore, right?
I think we're getting to that point with this.
I want to ease into it. Again, I hesitate on jumping ship.
I think we're getting to the point where fans
are... Sorry, I give him credit for the last decade of success.
Now that I can finish my sentence, I think we're getting to the. I think we're getting to the point where fans are starting to question, at least, that possibility. Just based on the feedback we get. From SPFWs, from blog comments.
And although I agree with him, you do have to wonder why it's in his head about looking up in the stands and seeing empty seats. And then you say, and then you look at how the troubles he's had on the road. Is the environment too much in his, you know, was he thinking too much about that? You know, the good ones are supposed to, they don't care what's going on around.
Now Mr. Ice Cold Veins from a 1 to 04 is like, head case.
Well, no.
And just so you know, the good ones don't worry about stuff like that.
Now he's
Let's not put him in that category.
Paul.
Oh, my God.
Great.
Great.
Great. We skipped past great. I mean, I'm not sure he's good.
But you know what I'm saying?
Let's put the brakes on a little bit here. I'm not real comfortable with the direction the show just took.
And Fred leading the charge.
Look, I agree with him, but I'm not sure that he should be even thinking about that.
Well, I don't think it affects him like it affected Lawrence Maroney, for instance.
And I think
where
he was
constantly
on the sideline, didn't he? Like he was on the sideline and he looked up.
Right. It wasn't like he was in the huddle patting the ball.
And
exactly.
Said, son of a bitch, there's nobody here anymore.
Plus, unlike Maroney, who in the middle of a 50-yard run was
acknowledged
thinking,
it.
I'm thinking about the fans and the media.
Don't you think there was, you know, they're looking for a little bit something extra. They're looking for a little extra juice. And more than likely, do you think that was something that was a big point of contention for him as the game was going on? Or
no.
Maybe after the game, you know, he's talking to whoever.
Will?
Jeez, you wouldn't believe the people leaving that game in the fourth quarter was unbelievable. Because it was noticeable for us. We were sitting there and we're saying, where are all these people going?
Right.
I don't think it was something that was necessarily occupying his time on the field. I think it was more of an observation after the fact.
Road games affect him at all, or have, you know, over the last year?
No,
not just being on the road, but the environment. Do you think he's
yes, you
do?
But him? I think he's had some bad games on the road. I think he's had some of those four pick dismal.
But do you think
stinkers.
That the environment has had anything
forever.
To do with that?
Well, he's had them forever, so yeah. I don't know. I'm just using the evidence.
Where are we going to put the playoff game?
What playoff game?
The Baltimore game.
What?
No, that's as bad as I've ever seen.
No, wait.
Him play.
He can only play bad on the road if I say he's affected by the road.
No. But he's
I've seen
certainly won a lot more road
snowball.
Games than he's lost, right?
But see, that
he's
was
won
it.
A lot more games everywhere than he's lost.
No, I know.
That's
but on
one
the
of those.
Road, we're talking about on the road.
That's one of
the.
Yeah,
so all of a sudden now he's struggling on the road. You think it's because
snowballs.
He's affected by it?
I think it snowballs on the road sometimes for him.
Maybe. I don't know.
And the Baltimore game, Paul.
I don't think I'm objective enough for this conversation.
I think you're meow.
I'm a Brady suck up. What do you want me to tell you? It was hard for me to take that baton from Drew.
I am too.
It takes a lot for a guy to do that.
That's my question right there. The baton passing, and not necessarily just Brady. I'm saying on offense, we think it's great maybe it's not great.
I'm just saying, maybe I'm not objective enough in this case.
Because
I think the guy can do no wrong.
I have as much faith in Brady as I do in Belichick, and so that's a lot. But I'm just throwing this stuff out there because, you know,
don't be wrong,
people are talking about it, and, you know, B, maybe I'm wrong. You know? I don't know, but I still have, obviously, the utmost faith in Tom Brady. Yeah. I wouldn't, you know.
But he lost his quarterback's coach, too. That's Bill O'Brien now. I mean, that's a factor in it. Josh McDaniels was his guy for a long period of time, quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator.
I think
we're just going to question everything, literally everything.
I still think our criticisms last year, our defenses last year were valid about the options, and I think the options are going to present themselves. It's two games.
It's two games.
And
if they do, then it becomes either the quarterback or the coordinator.
Well,
it's the same guy.
I think you're going to see those guys earn more and more trust from Tom, and I think you're going to see a more consistent offensive approach.
But don't you think they have to run the ball a little bit in order for even those guys to have a chance?
I hope not, because I don't have any faith that this team can run
the
ball. Even
the threat that they could, you know?
I thought they were going to be able to surprise the Jets a little bit. That's why my pregame thing, I gave the Patriots the edge running. I thought they might catch them off guard. I was really excited early when I saw a 38-yard run, and I was gloating.
Right.
Andy asked me who I was arguing with.
He was. doing a take that to somebody who didn't exist and wasn't there.
And then all of a sudden they had a flag on the play, and it spiraled out of control from there.
He was giddy about 5 carries for 11 yards for Fred Taylor.
Yeah, it went
south.
It
would look better if it was, 6 for 49?
It went south in a hurry. I also didn't know that, you know, we were turning the reins over to Benny. You know, no disrespect to law firm, but I thought Fred Taylor would get 15 carries.
Yeah.
Not 5.
I can't figure that one out if he's 100% healthy.
Don't worry. By this time next week, we'll be talking about the 42-7 beating of the Bills, and everybody will be giddy.
But you know what? I said
what
before the Jets
about,
game,
what if we're
I'm
talking
not gonna...
about a 23-21 victory.
Oh. People won't be giddy, I'll tell you that much.
And like I said before the Jets game, I'm preparing myself emotionally for the Patriots to lose that game. I'm also making sure that I don't get too emotional if the Patriots blow out the Bills.
And all fans are going to do that. They're going to get less high and less low, and they'll realize it is going to be a roller coaster, so reality is going to be in the middle somewhere.
Right.
38-13 this week.
No.
31-13?
I think that's plausible. Absolutely.
Is 23-21 plausible?
What do you expect? Forget about what do you expect to 38-13?
38-13.
Yeah.
This weekend?
Yeah.
I think they could put up 30 points against this team easily.
I think it might be a little bit of a struggle early because I think the Bills aren't bad defensively.
But I could see the Bills putting up in the 20s.
But once their offense goes 3-and-out like 8 times in a row, because if they have a problem, if they have a problem with this offense, you can definitively say this, the Patriots defense will not stop anybody. This is as impotent an offense as they will see all year.
But
they have
what do you
nothing.
Mean by a problem?
I'm talking about
if CJ
drives.
Spiller has 280-yard plays.
No, I'm talking about drives, like last year on opening night.
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to give up
a couple
big
plays. Do you remember what Trent Edwards did on opening night last year?
Yep.
They had like 8, 9-minute drives for touchdowns. If that happens, they're not stopping anyone.
There's no chance.
Now, anybody can hit you for a big play. That can happen. The Patriots have to make sure it doesn't happen.
Even the guy who averages 3.9 a reception is bound to break one.
You're really stuck on that, huh?
I've never seen anything like it.
He's played 2 games.
He's the 9th overall picks, 8th, 7th, somewhere in there. He's got 8 catches, Paul. If Wes Welker had 8 catches for 3.9 yards, you'd be ripping him.
Well, what's he got? 7? 7 yards?
Ooh. that makes my point.
14 for 7 yards a pop?
He's ripping the guy who's done it for 3 straight years. I mean, CJ Spiller.
But I'm not ripping him. That's the difference.
Is as dynamic a rookie to enter this league as, I mean, you'll see.
I agree. He's a big play guy. I picked him for rookie.
He's averaging less than whatever, 4 yards a touch.
That's another great pick. I have the Cowboys.
I resign.
I have the Cowboys in the Super Bowl, and I have CJ Spiller as my rookie of the year.
Well, the Cowboys will be fine. With that offense, that high-powered
offense. Todd Haley is the coach of the year, though. The Chiefs are 2-0. When they go 4-12, I'll remember back. They're still waiting to score an offensive touchdown.
Carl in Longmeadow, Mass. says, longtime fans who have been complaining about the lack of playmakers due to poor drafting, terrible free agency, and untimely release of established stars are not at all surprised at the decline in the franchise over the last few years. Only 30%
of Eric? He had it.
Only 30% of the Pats draftees remain since 06, while the improving teams and the true contenders average close to 50%. The failure to address the lack of pass rush either through trading up, not down during the draft, or acquiring expensive
known free agents such as Julius Peppers or Jason Taylor, without fearing another Adalis Thomas, has made it sure that no cornerback will succeed. An out-of-date defensive plan and no true quality imaginative offensive corner has sealed their fate.
Wow.
What is truly amazing is that New England sports media did not recognize what was obvious to even the most casual fan. Come on, guys, try to be objective and address the issues that all of us stupid fans have observed for years.
That was for Paul.
No, that's right. We are all about Patriots.com, Fred. See, I told you, we're not being objective enough. I've been trying to tell you that for a long time now.
Thanks for sending that email this week.
Let's see, another email.
No, I remember he sent that after the Bengals game.
Yeah. No, he actually sent it like 3 years ago.
I had the same one after the Bengals game.
Ross from Glasgow. Brady made a comment on EE on Monday that he didn't want to put pressure on the rookies to perform in the second half at the end. Well, I'm not sure what Hernandez and Gronk have done to suggest they can't handle it. When they've actually been thrown to, they made a big play. Put Edelman in that category as well. In fact, the only one not to really show up yet is Tate. So Brady is talking BS because the rookies will never be able to prove they can handle it until you give them a chance. Throw them the frickin' ball. I don't know if it is Brady or O'Brien, but they need to use all these weapons for this offense and the team to win. As an aside, I'm gutted for Falk, and he will be a big miss. Sammy Morris would be the conservative choice, but a committee is also possible. Perhaps Woodhead in the long term, but who knows. Nevertheless, an overhaul similar to the tight end position this year is due for the running backs next year. There was talk of Ingram being coveted by the Pats, but what vets could you see as a fit? D'Angelo Williams of Carolina would be available next year. Thoughts? No, none?
I don't really love Mark Ingram. I know this is
I want no
sort
part
of blasphemy.
Of him, yeah. You know me on the big backs.
Typical Andy style. I fell in love with his backup, the Richardson kid.
We actually talked about that with Rook on his show last week.
I love him. And I also didn't even know this. He returns kicks, too. I saw he had a long kick.
He had a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
I was surprised that we haven't gotten any SPFWs about Larry Johnson being cut by Washington. Because usually any player that gets cut from any team, no matter where they are on the roster, is automatically a Patriots material.
I was talking to someone walking out yesterday. They said, hey, Larry Johnson just got cut. I go, oh, good. I have a Wednesday to look forward to of people wondering if we're going to sign
him. Now, refresh my memory. Was there rumored interest for the Patriots last time or reported interest?
Don't know.
That's a good question.
Larry Johnson?
Yeah. I kind of remember something.
It was certainly rumored. I don't remember if it was reported, though.
There's a big difference, though.
Right, there is.
Bring him in. Who cares? Does it matter?
No. I mean, he's kind of the example
of
I always
feel
Danny
like
Woodhead,
you might as well sign this guy, right?
Well, Woodhead is
different
versatile,
completely different type of running back.
And theoretically has an upside. I'm not sure Larry Johnson has much upside anymore.
Eric in Brooklyn.
Pick a Woodhead.
Well, it's just 1 week later, and we find ourselves with a roster spot to fill. We also find ourselves again with the absence of a familiar back. Last week, Maroney. This week, Falk, even though it seems Falk was still at the facility today. That's one up and two down at the running back position in the last week. So how do you see us filling that spot? Also, have you guys seen Danny Woodhead? I guess he was in some preseason action for the Jets. I thought his acquisition was just a Kevin O'Connell-style scheme scoop, but now it seems that it was just a genuine signing, as he didn't even travel on Sunday to New York. What role do you guys see for him?
He actually traveled from New York to New England, apparently. He was preparing for the Bills.
He was preparing for the Bills wherever he was.
Preparing for the Bills. I think that
even at home, he was preparing for the Bills.
By the way,
they called.
Right.
You know, I agree 1,000% that O'Connell was signed for gamesmanship, but he was still there. I mean, he stayed there
the whole
year.
Competed in training camp.
The last I saw, he was
traded for.
No,
he was cut, remember?
The Patriots cut him.
Patriots cut him and then
he went to the Lions first before he went to the Jets.
Oh, did they trade for him?
You're right. I forgot about that.
Maybe they did.
I forgot all about that.
But I do think there was gamesmanship involved in that. But he stayed there the whole year.
Steel trap, Eric.
Seriously.
And he also, I don't know if they ever did it, but heading into the week, they were going to re-sign him and put him on IR.
I believe they did.
With a shoulder injury. So he's still there.
Right.
I mean, that's, for gamesmanship, a 2-year commitment, I don't know if you would do
that. Oh, I didn't even know they did that. So he's still Jets property?
It was reported. It was definitely reported.
Cannizzaro had said that they were going to re-sign him and put him on IR with a shoulder injury.
Oh.
You know, clearly that has nothing to do with the Patriots.
No.
I mean, now he's a whole year
They like him enough to keep him around.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, no, I don't. Listen, I That's a swing and a miss for me. It's probably one of my worst draft evaluations of the last 5 years.
He's got a little Chad Jackson.
I'm with you there, Paul.
Because I really liked...
Who couldn't play football? He looks good.
I liked his tape. I liked the way he played. And
good kid.
Who knew he couldn't throw the ball?
Jay writes in, sorry to be doom and gloom, but this team is done. As I felt before the season started. With their schedule, serious lack of talent on the defensive side, who could play for the Jets other than Wilfork? Inconsistency on offense and lack of coaching talent. No halftime adjustments, a trend that's continuing from last year. It all adds up to a 7-9 record. The way Brady played in the second half, constantly looking to Moss instead of finding the open receiver, he reminded me of Bledsoe. Just throw the ball in Coates' direction. I'm glad I have NFL Red Zone. It'll give me the opportunity to see some exciting football. I hate our fans.
Wow. Did you?
I mean, really.
Why, Fred?
They're just giving up in week two. It's unbelievable. Gave up before the season started.
What are they?
Did you make the argument that we were talking about upstairs earlier about Moss, about Brady forcing it to Moss when they lost their best cornerback? And
I don't know if we've discussed it, but yeah, sort of. The fact that they threw to him more in the first half when Revis was still out there.
Right.
They got the best corner out of the game.
Exactly.
Thought they had a matchup against the number two corner who gives up plays.
They only threw it to him four times in the second half. The problem is they didn't have a lot of plays.
34 plays they ran in the first half, 23 in the second.
But people, and I would also
somebody
argue
even
that
asked,
he was open when the
somebody
interception
asked after the, right after the game, I think, asked Brady or Bill, you know, were you, or maybe it was Monday, were you trying to force it to Moss in the second half? Who was forcing it?
I would just say, I pay the guy $9 million a year for a reason. I'm going to throw to him on the field.
I just think those things are, you know, Fred, you mentioned it's too easy, the whole coordinator thing, is Bill spread too thin. I think that's a very easy out. You know, he's just forced it to Moss. He forced it to Moss. He forced it to Moss. Did he? I mean, was every throw to Moss the right play? No. No.
Was every throw a good throw?
Look, I think we should concentrate on the plays that they did on first and second down rather than those.
I mean, thought they, you know, I thought the timing of some of the running plays in that game in the second half.
They're trying
to be
tricky.
I thought they got themselves into long yarded situations unnecessarily.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
What's the matter over there, Andy?
Nothing.
All right.
Not all gestures are meant to be brought on the air.
Sitting in his basement is John Rook. John, how you doing?
Fortress of Solitude.
Wow.
Fortress of Solitude.
And it's a step up if it's
not,
his own basement.
It's not catching on, John.
It's usually his mom's basement.
Mom's basement? No, it's my own basement.
Flooded?
My own basement. No, nothing's flooded. Everything's good.
Did your basement flood? You live in Rhode Island.
No, nothing flooded.
Because we would have had a radio show, right? All the equipment would have been mashed up.
John, get ready with the first downs because you're going to have a lot of them this week.
You think so? Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I
for the Patriots.
Was under the impression, listening to some of these emails, that the fans think they're going to win.
Well, yeah. I tell you,
we got a few fans that said they're done.
Yeah,
7-9 at best, done.
There's a lot of people who are jumping ship in week two, and it's disappointing. Yeah.
Well, I can't say that I'm really surprised, to be honest with you.
I mean, I am.
You know, fans are fickle. No, fans are fickle. Fans around here are spoiled, Fred. Come on, you know that.
This show is taking a turn for the worse if you're a fan.
Fred called you. You
Fred
hate
says
him.
He hates
Paul
you.
Paul calls him stupid, and John Rook calls him fickle. And
I finally won over the masses.
I love the fans. I think they're tremendous.
I welcome this.
Come on.
This
you just won't
we
talk to them.
We couldn't do what we do without them.
Just pets
they
that's
are
right.
Spoiled.
It'll come out. Don't worry.
These are our all right. So
we're
John,
I'd have no problem doing what I do without them.
We're John, spoiled, too. When was the last time we had to actually break down a team that was difficult to get your the feel for?
You were
real tough 14-2 when you go, I'll take the Pats.
You're right.
Well, John, what are you going to do today?
I'm going to sit here on my butt in my basement.
I mean, on your show.
Oh,
yeah,
he's
okay.
Going to sit there on his butt in his basement.
Well, Eric's going to join us in the opening hour. We'll kind of go over the whole
Eric Scalamino?
Kevin Falk story.
Okay.
And then Mark Kelso from the Bills Radio Network, former defensive back for the Bills, he's going to join us in hour number two.
We never even actually talked about the whole Michael Vick situation in Philly, so that's probably a topic that people want to talk about, too.
Michael Vick?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that... he's probably the better quarterback, but I think that Andy Reid has put himself in a little bit of a situation here.
He's done. He's done.
Yeah.
He
Reid
got rid of McNabb, and he hooked his wagon to Cobb. I think everybody assumed he thought, I got my next guy. He's the next franchise quarterback. 2 weeks in, he's ready to hand the keys over to some guy who runs around and isn't exciting.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Reid is probably done, but at the same time, what he's trying to do is win now. And Vic is the best option for them to win now. There's no doubt.
I think
well, then Cobb can't be that good.
I don't think he is. I think he's highly overrated.
Well, then Andy Reid should be done because he's
overrated.
But what
if,
he had a guy that won a lot of games for
him. What if whatever level Michael Vick was before the whole dog incident, he is now that much smarter and really is a better quarterback than he was before. And you just realize that.
How do you know?
I'm just saying, what if?
Did he study film in jail?
Well, no, but people get
he
wiser.
Like the same guy to me.
Yeah. I think he actually looks a half step slower.
He ran around like a chicken with his head cut off. He got sacked six times by the Detroit Lions and put up 35 points.
He's the athletic backup quarterback. It's the easy answer, but it's never the right long-term answer.
Correct. Gosh, I can't believe I agree with you.
Hook 'em horns, baby. Hook 'em horns.
The hell is wrong with me?
You come over to the smart side.
Well, Andy,
the dark side.
Andy Reid certainly has seen something to make him do this move, and
I think he's pooping himself, and he knows he's just about
done. I'm guessing that Cobb is not fully ready to play. That's my guess.
But that would be easy to just say that. You mean physically or?
Well, mentally.
Okay.
Like,
well, then that's
still
different.
Well, then maybe he should
have
been
easy out for him to say, you know, we're going to be cautious about the head injury and all that.
Well, I think that's a given. I mean, I think they needed to be cautious with the head injury. Look, I think Kevin Cobb can end up being a decent quarterback. I just don't think he's the right quarterback at this time if you're Philadelphia and you're trying to compete in that division.
Yeah, well, you should have thought about that before he got rid of Donovan McNabb.
You're absolutely correct about that.
Nah.
I thought that was stupid.
Nah.
All right. Paul doesn't like any of the Philly quarterbacks.
I don't think that division's all that good.
Paul doesn't like Philly.
9-7
I don't blame him
division.
For that.
9-7 wins that division.
All right, John. We'll leave it up to you. There's a lot of emails we haven't gotten to. They're all nasty. No, I'm only kidding. So stay tuned for John Rook's playbook. As for us, we'll see you tomorrow.
That'll do it. Another PFW in progress. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Yeah, Dad, yeah.
Patriots.com Radio.